drummer boy, and in the wars I used to play, and I've called at you to many a torture session. Now they say I am a war criminal, and I'm fading away. Father, please hear my confession. I have legalized robbery, called it belief. I have a run with the money, I have a hit like a thief. Rewritten history with my armies and my crows, invented memories. I did burn all the books, and I can still hear his laughter, and I can still hear his song. The man's too big, the man's too strong.
Listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Walmart has bowed to the will of the Chinese Labor Federation. The world's biggest retailer, well known for its anti-union stance, said on Monday that it would allow the federation to organize stores in that country. The All China Federation of Trade Unions issued a threat in October that it would sue Walmart and other international companies if they refused to set up union branches in their China operations. The federation is the only union organizing body in that country and is controlled by the Communist Party. Walmart operates 39 stores in China that employ 20,000 workers. Currently, the only Walmart in the world with an accredited union is located north of Quebec City in Canada.
Thousands of people marched across India this week to protest Coke's water extraction program that they say is threatening their livelihoods.
It began in Balia, which is where there's one Coke plant, and marching to another Coke plant in Mediganj, 150 miles away in northeastern India.
Brian Hirsch, field organizer with Corporate Accountability International. He says Coke is turning water from a basic human right into an unaffordable luxury.
India has a lot less groundwater regulations, and so they've got away with things like going into one community where they dried up hundreds of public hand-pumped wells, and now there's not enough water to meet basic needs. In another community, Mediganj, the water tables have dropped 40 feet, and actually over 40 feet, and it's been devastating to farmers. There's not enough water to irrigate crops.
The United Nations estimates that two-thirds of the world's population will not have enough water by 2025. Corporate Accountability International is demanding Coke never reopen its Pakimata plant, close its plant in Mediganj, and pay for damage done to affected communities.
A pickup truck allegedly trying to break through a picket line at a Ormec Corporation aluminum plant has struck and injured a union member. Monday was the first day of a strike organized by the United Steelworkers of America at a plant located in Hannibal, Ohio. Chuck Ballard, president of USWA Local 5760, says member Bill Rose was injured when a truck belonging to Jabo Supply Corporation charged through the line and ran over his leg. More than 1,300 employees walked off the job Monday, demanding that Ormec postpone a hearing with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court concerning a reorganization plan. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. For the first time since the early 70s, the number of foreign students enrolled in U.S. colleges and universities has declined. A survey released on November 15th lists the war on terrorism as the number one reason. Titled Open Doors 2004 and published by the Institute of International Education, the number of students who came to the United States to study last year dropped by 5%, and incomplete statistics this year suggest that number could be down another 6%. Many students, especially from Islamic countries, are finding it more difficult to obtain visas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
A question for those of you who voted for George W. Were you casting your ballot in support of letting industry put more toxic pollutants in your air and generally turning environmental policy over to the tender mercies of corporate polluters and plunderers? Well, whether that's what you meant or not, the Bushites are using your vote as their excuse to do all of the above and more. Quote, "The election is a validation of our philosophy and agenda," crowed Michael Levitt, Bush's corporate-minded head of the EPA, claiming that they now have a mandate to do environmental favors for various industries. First up will be their perversely named Clear Skies Bill. Far from clearing our skies, it will let utilities and other polluters pump an additional 42 tons of deadly poisons into our air and lungs each year. Ironically, this industry-written legislation would undermine the clean air standards enacted by Georgia's own daddy, Bush the First. Also, the White House and oil lobbyists are reviving their old fight to allow oil drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The plunderers lost this fight in Georgia's first term, but now they claim that the election gives them a green light to roll their trucks, rigs, and pipelines into the heart of this national refuge. Another priority is to allow more mining and other destructive energy projects on public lands and parks in western states, a proposal that, in the past, has angered many conservative ranchers, farmers, hunters, and anglers. In addition, the Bushites are planning to weaken other environmental protections at the behest of big developers, timber barons, and others. Millions of Americans who thought they were voting for a man who stands for high moral principle are about to see the real Bush, a man who stands for the right of corporate power to run roughshod over our natural resources and public health. This is Jim Hightower saying, Bush talked a lot about God in his campaign, but he was deceivingly quiet about what he plans to do to God's green earth.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me. You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
Of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, which war was it that Joseph Heller was writing about in Catch-22? The good old Yossarian. Yeah, it's been a lot of years since I read them. The discussion of the moment in our chat room. Welcome, Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, beaming into cable TV systems in 29 states on cable radio network, and with archives at White Rose Society and TomHartman.com. And if you want to drop into our chat room, participate in a live chat, just go to TomHartman.com. It'll get you there. Andy Borowitz has our lead story for the day. President George W. Bush broke with the White House tradition today, killing the ceremonial White House turkey and pardoning White House Majority Leader Tom DeLay instead. The reporters and busloads of schoolchildren who had gathered on the White House lawn to see the president pardon this year's turkey, named Biscuits, were surprised to hear Mr. Bush adopt a hard-line stance toward the bird. Mr. Bush announced to the stunned onlookers, "I have political capital, and I intend to spend it, first by killing and then by eating this delectable turkey." Onlookers watched as Biscuits was dragged away by two burly Secret Service agents. Mr. Bush then said that he would use his traditional Thanksgiving Day pardon to free Mr. Tom DeLay from any charges of campaign finance wrongdoing, and he then pardoned the Texas congressman across the lawn to complete the festive holiday ceremony. Jenny Culver, 11, of Silver Spring, Maryland, expressed a view shared by many who witnessed the history-making event. She said, "He pardoned the wrong turkey." Well, thanks to Andy Borowitz for that insight into today's news. Some interesting things in the Wall Street Journal today, in the news, and the media, just right across the board, about this whole issue of how do we stop class warfare in the United States by the conservative elite who seem hell-bent for leather on destroying the American middle class, reducing the historic American middle class into, you know, back down into the working poor, taking us back to the Scrooge and Marley era. What can be done about this? How do we change this? By the way, in our second hour, have you heard Jerry Falwell, the Reverend Jerry Falwell, has called the National Order at National Organization of Women, WNOW, the National Order of Witches, and has invited PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, to participate in a very strange event. Stay tuned. We'll fill you in on that. But the events of our day, and Falwell, for his share, is part of this. This entire conservative machine that really got started big time in its modern incarnation, you know, after Roosevelt sort of slowed it down throughout the 30s, and it just kind of kept creeping back up. It really got started in its modern incarnation in the 1980s with Ronald Reagan, when Reagan came in and declared war on the American organized labor movement. And this started, you know, there's this kind of broad consensus. Well, David Brock actually does a marvelous job of documenting it in his book, Blinded by the Right. Excuse me. There's this began in the 70s, largely as a response to the defeat of Barry Goldwater. But I would say it goes way beyond that. I would say that it was a response these folks have been wanting to roll back the reforms of the populists and progressives that happened in the early part of the 20th century, from Teddy Roosevelt's 1907 law making it illegal for corporations to participate in politics or give money to political campaigns, which has been, you know, effectively diluted, to the economic changes made by Franklin Roosevelt. And it even looks in some ways, and I'll tell you about this more later in the program, that even, you know, Jerry Falwell is almost virtually calling for rollback of the constitutional amendment giving women the right to vote. I mean, it's scary. It's not just rolling back a century, two centuries of progress in America, holding the American ideal, and then getting beyond things like slavery and apartheid, segregation, and re-empowering women. But there is this pervasive economic agenda, and it cloaks itself in some very strange ways. In Christianity, for example, I got an email here from Gerald. Doesn't say the city he's in. He says, probably it's been pointed out to you, it's Matthew 25. Yesterday I mentioned the Matthew 24 conundrum. It's a conundrum for the people on the right who are claiming Christian values and ignoring the values that Jesus laid out in Matthew 25. And anyhow, he says, I would suggest not saying Matthew 25 tells you how to get into heaven, but that Matthew 25 says you will go to hell unless you... It's interesting, bringing up the issue of moving toward pleasure or moving away from pain, the two motivational strategies that we talked about yesterday in our NLP lesson. Which would be more effective over the short term? Of course, the moving away from pain over the short term. But over the long term, the moving toward pleasure one would be more effective, which frankly is why I think Christianity has had so much power. and all of the major religions, for that matter, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, at the core of each one of them are very powerful moving toward pleasure messages. But I digress. Here we have, on the front page of today's Wall Street Journal, this a symptom. This is one of the cracks in the walls. This article, Foregoing Insurance, Mr. Shelby Bargains for His Health Care. It's a story about this guy. His name's Curtis Shelby, one of America's 45 million uninsured. He's a cabinet maker, but he's also a member of a religious sect called the Old German Baptist Brethren. And they're sort of like the Mennonites and the Amish, really, I guess, the closest. And he doesn't believe in health insurance. And now he's had a heart attack, cancer, pancreatitis, and a diseased gallbladder. And he's had to have medical services for these things. And so, well, as the Wall Street Journal notes, this article, excellent article by Lucette Lagnato. She says, Mr. Shelby has had to shell out tens of thousands of dollars. In the process, he has learned to shop for health care the way other Americans shop for cars. He haggles over prices. He asks for discounts if he pays up front. He goes to different hospitals, scouting out their best offers, and then pits them against each other. Then she goes on to say, and this is the heads up, folks. This is coming down the road. Mr. Shelby has already done, writes Ms. Lagnato in the Wall Street Journal today, Mr. Shelby has already done what millions of Americans may soon be doing. As companies shift to, quote, consumer-driven, end quote, health care plans and health savings accounts, these plans typically move more health care costs to consumers, which may encourage them to shop around in order to save money. Advocates of these plans say they will stimulate competition among health care providers. So this is the ownership society. We all own a few dollars we can buy our health care with. And so you have to go out and knock on hospital doors and spend those dollars wisely. Now, there is a certain logic to that. And, in fact, it's a logic that extends to the idea of having co-pays and deductibles, something that I think within reasonable limits is probably a good idea. But that people participate in some way in their health care, as long as we're going to have, if we're not going to have a single payer system where you have one single entity that is paying the bills and therefore has a strong incentive to get the prices down, as they do in Germany, as they do in most countries around the world. If you're not going to have that, then yeah, it's arguable. But in any case, this is the new logic. We're going to encourage these folks. Advocates of these plans say they will stimulate competition among healthcare providers and make consumers cut back on unnecessary tests and procedures, eventually lowering costs. So let's get rid of the unnecessary tests and procedures, and to just not catch a lot more disease. See, this is the diseases before they get really bad. This is the problem that we see among the underinsured and the uninsured. And rapidly in America, the insured are becoming the underinsured, just like the employed are becoming the underemployed, as insurance companies are cranking up minimum payments and co-pays and refusing to pay for many things. And we're finding that many Americans are just saying, I think I'll wait to go to the doctor. I don't really want to spend that extra $50 or $100 or $300 or $500 for the hospital's going to charge for the tests that's going to go to this year's deductible, or the $50 copay or whatever it may be. Even the $15 copay for some people is a lot of money. But we have a system that doesn't really acknowledge that. And as a consequence of that, we have many people in the United States, and the last estimate that I saw was about 20,000 people a year die as a consequence of not having health insurance and therefore not discovering illnesses when they are treatable, but only discovering them when they've reached the point where they're no longer treatable. And this is the natural and logical consequence of the failure to have a national health care system in this country. And we spend in the United States right now on a per capita basis more money than any other country in the world. And that includes all the people who are not covered with health insurance. We spend more on health care. And yet, we don't have the longest lifespan in the world. We don't have the best health in the world. And it boils down very simply to the reason that the healthcare industry, there, you know, it's been Bill Fristized. It's been Fristized. For-profit corporations have inserted themselves into a business that many communities used to say had to be nonprofit, hospitals, for example, and health insurance. I remember, you know, 30, 40 years ago, all the health insurance companies, most of the health insurance companies in the United States, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, whatnot, they were not-for-profit corporations. Their first goal was to provide health care. But now, they've got to skim 10% off the top to pay dividends to their stockholders. They've got to pay multi-million-dollar salaries to their CEOs. They've got to pay for the corporate jets and the gold faucets in the bathroom. They've got to pay for the fancy headquarters and all of the advertising. And they have to pay millions of dollars in lobbying to politicians to maintain their profits. And thus, our health care costs go through the roof. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each day. For offer ends July 17, 2000.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
We're privatizing Medicare, it's history, and what will take its place will be a prime example, truly ample, opportunity. Oh, there's a hefty deductible on all the drugs you need.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. This is just an example of it's a symptom of a larger problem. And this larger problem is the idea that everything should be done most effectively and can be done most effectively by private for-profit corporations. Let me just say at the outset, there are many things, in fact, probably the vast majority of things, in an economy as complex and interconnected as ours is, that are best done by private for-profit corporations. I would frankly prefer that a company interested in making a buck and competing in the marketplace is making my telephone and my lights and my furniture and my clothes and on the list goes. Because there is the reality of market forces. They will compete to produce better products. There will be a range of options. I can buy something cheap and know that it's only going to last a little while, or I can buy something more expensive, it's going to last longer. We can make our choices in that marketplace. All in favor of that. And I'm all in favor of people making money doing that. I have in my life, most of us have involved ourselves in some ways with for-profit companies, working for them, starting them, running them. Whatever. It's a fine thing, in my opinion. And there are many things in our world, in our society, in our culture, there are many things that, frankly, we the people do best by ourselves. And we figured this out along the way. For example, with fire departments. It used to be that fire departments were private in many cities. This goes all the way back to Ben Franklin trying to fix this in Philadelphia, but as recently as 100 years ago, more or less, 100 and, well, maybe 120 years ago, in Chicago, for example, fire departments were private, and you would pay a monthly fee to a fire company, literally a fire corporation, firefighting corporation. And then they would give you a medallion that you would put on the front of your house. And if your house was on fire, the fire company would, you'd call up the fire, you'd run down to the fire company and say, hey, my house is on fire. They'd come by and make sure that your medallion was up to date. And if it wasn't, or if you had the wrong medallion, or if the wrong fire company showed it, they'd just drive right on by. And after, a long enough period of time, I probably took a generation or so, but after a while, people figured out this wasn't the best way to do things. Competition among private companies is great if you're talking about selling shoes. But when we're talking about somebody's house being on fire, we'd like to know that it's going to be taken care of, and we would like to take care of it. We would like to take care of it ourselves. We are willing to pay for this. We're pleased to have this as part of the commons. We think it's a good thing. We're all willing to pay for it collectively. We're willing to contribute our tax dollars to this. This is the price of a civil society. And I would suggest to you that being sick in modern society, given the state of medicine today, and this, by the way, probably wasn't true 200 years ago. It's certainly not to the extent that it is now. 200 years ago, when most of medicine consisted of leeches and herbs, and frankly, probably the majority of medicine practiced in the United States was practiced by midwives and herbalists and people who were not you know, expensive professionals. They were your uncle, right? But with the state of medicine today, I would suggest that somebody being seriously ill is the equivalent of their house being on fire. And therefore, healthcare should be part of our commons, just like our fire department, our police department, our system should be part of our commons. Instead of having these essentially leeches attached to it, sucking the blood out of it, of the Bill Frists of the world. This is something, in my opinion, that is just absolutely wrong. And the rest of the world, by the way, has come to this conclusion as well. Virtually every, you know, fully formed, modern, first world democracy has said, yeah, healthcare, it's a part of the commons. This is something that should be available to everybody. Except the United States. Why? Because there's a huge lobby. There's such big money to be made. Just ask Bill Frist.
Every morning you send your kids out into a world filled with drugs, peer pressure, alcohol, even violence. How can you be sure they have the skills to find their way home safely? That they can make good decisions when you're not watching over them? This is Barry Williams, urging you to call the Girls and Boys Town National Hotline for help and advice at 1-800-448-3000. The call is free anytime, day or night. 1-800-448-3000. Just call. Your kids will be glad you did. Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Walmart has bowed to the will of the Chinese Labor Federation. The world's biggest retailer, well known for its anti-union stance, said on Monday that it would allow the federation to organize stores in that country. The All China Federation of Trade Unions issued a threat in October that it would sue Walmart and other international companies if they refused to set up union branches in their China operations. The federation is the only union organizing body in that country and is controlled by the Communist Party. Walmart operates 39 stores in China that employ 20,000 workers. Currently, the only Walmart in the world with an accredited union is located north of Quebec City in Canada.
Thousands of people marched across India this week to protest Coke's water extraction program that they say is threatening their livelihoods.
It began in Balia, which is where there's one Coke plant, and marching to another Coke plant in Mediganj, 150 miles away in northeastern India.
Brian Hirsch, field organizer with Corporate Accountability International. He says Coke is turning water from a basic human right into an unaffordable luxury.
India has a lot less groundwater regulations, and so they've got away with things like going into one community where they dried up hundreds of public hand-pumped wells, and now there's not enough water to meet basic needs. In another community, Mediganj, the water tables have dropped 40 feet, and actually over 40 feet, and it's been devastating to farmers. There's not enough water to irrigate crops.
The United Nations estimates that two-thirds of the world's population will not have enough water by 2025. Corporate Accountability International is demanding Coke never reopen its Pakimata plant, close its plant in Mediganj, and pay for damage done to affected communities.
A pickup truck allegedly trying to break through a picket line at a Ormec Corporation aluminum plant has struck and injured a union member. Monday was the first day of a strike organized by the United Steelworkers of America at a plant located in Hannibal, Ohio. Chuck Ballard, president of USWA Local 5760, says member Bill Rose was injured when a truck belonging to Jabo Supply Corporation charged through the line and ran over his leg. More than 1,300 employees walked off the job Monday, demanding that Ormec postpone a hearing with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court concerning a reorganization plan. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. For the first time since the early 70s, the number of foreign students enrolled in U.S. colleges and universities has declined. A survey released on November 15th lists the war on terrorism as the number one reason. Titled Open Doors 2004 and published by the Institute of International Education, the number of students who came to the United States to study last year dropped by 5%, and incomplete statistics this year suggest that number could be down another 6%. Many students, especially from Islamic countries, are finding it more difficult to obtain visas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I've been there one time.
Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you want to drop into our chat room, go to TomHartman.com, or you can go over to the message board there and participate in one of the fascinating discussions. I posted a piece in the Iraq section of the message board, by the way, that I keep meaning. I posted it the day before yesterday, I believe, and I keep meaning to mention, and so I'll do it now. It is a link to a BBC documentary. This is something that the entire world saw on the British Broadcasting Corporation. Well, let's not say the entire... The United Kingdom, anyway, saw on the BBC. BBC has a pretty broad reach, actually. The entire world can see it on the web right now. And it's a three-hour documentary that details the parallel rise of the neoconservatives in the United States, largely starting with the Nixon administration, and the Islamic Jihad movement in the Middle East, and how they both started at the same time. They both started within a few hundred miles of each other, and they both started with the same philosophy, and continue to hold it to this day. You'll find it amazing. The link is there. You can see the program. We're going to talk about it more next week. In fact, I want to write a piece about it this weekend. But it's called The Power of Nightmares, is this BBC program. Here we have a state that has gone, a nation state that is going full tilt boogie in this direction. As this is an article by Selena Williams in today's Wall Street Journal, as Georgia, the country of Georgia, the former Soviet Republic, celebrates its first anniversary of its bloodless revolution. This is when they kicked out Shevardnadze, you'll recall. This one of the two velvet revolutions, that and Czechoslovakia. Anyhow, as Georgia celebrates its first anniversary of a bloodless revolution, its leaders are telling foreign investors that nearly everything is for sale. They've been talking to the neocons. They've been the conservatives, the economic conservatives. Airports, seaports, and the country's entire telecommunications network are among 1,500 state-owned assets that will go on the block in the former Soviet Republic over the next 2 years. Now, see, this is the point. There are some things that's appropriate for us to have done by us, by we the people, rather than have private corporations doing them. A great article in today's New York Times, I believe it was, about charter schools, and how charter schools, here it is. A new study commissioned by the Department of Education, which compares the achievement of students in charter schools with those attending traditional public schools in five states, has concluded that the charter schools were less likely to meet state performance standards. In Texas, for example, the study found that 98% of public schools met state performance requirements 2 years ago, but that only 66% of charter schools did, even when adjusted for race and poverty. The study said this charter schools fell far short more frequently by a statistically significant amount. This is five case studies, by the way, done Texas, Colorado, Illinois, Massachusetts, North Carolina. In every case, quote, charter schools are less likely to meet state performance standards than traditional public schools, end quote. The New York Times article by Sam Dillon and Deanna Jean Shimo notes with no small irony, the report's finding appears to present a new complication for the Bush administration as it seeks to carry out the No Child Left Behind law, which says that public schools failing to meet achievement objectives over several years may be converted. In Georgia, they're trying to privatize pretty much everything, and there's probably a lot. If they have 1,500 state-run industries in Georgia, probably a lot of them need to be privatized. You don't need a state-run shoe company. But state-run fire department, I think that's a good idea. State-run air traffic control system, I think that's a good idea. As an incentive in the next few weeks, the Wall Street Journal notes, Georgia's parliament is expected to reduce the number of taxes on businesses to 9 from 22 and lower some tax rates. The value-added tax will drop from to 18% from 20%, and the flat income tax rate will fall to 12% from 20%. There will also be unrestricted repatriation of profits. In other words, you can make money in Georgia and take it all out. You can strip mine the country of Georgia. They are basically saying to the multinational corporations, come and get us. We will sell our people to you and their labor and our natural resources, and you can just do whatever you want with it. And this is the system that we have imposed on Iraq that the Iraqi people are, let's say, rather unhappy about right now. And here it's happening in Georgia, too. Let's take a few phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Ryan in Michigan's on the line. Hey, Ryan, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. Ryan, what's up?
Hey, speaking of things that the government is privatizing, believe it or not, I'm in the process of trying to get a job translating for the DEA, and I was calling today talking to them, and I guess this isn't important enough to belong to we the people. They've decided to hire a subcontractor for translation of wiretapped phone calls about for the DEA.
So if the government is spying on somebody because they think they might be involved with drugs or their kid is involved with drugs, and they have these wiretaps, they're outsourcing the transcription of this to private corporations. Oh, boy.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
You've got to get a security clearance from the DEA, but they're willing to waive it because it can take up to a year. So
yeah,
maybe in another month I'll be spying on people and translating them, yet won't
yep.
have any government benefits or any of that. They'll probably pay the company $40 an hour, and the company in turn is paying out $17.
Yeah,
pay the rest to the CEO and stockholders.
And you just perfectly identified, Ryan, the two big portions of the agenda of privatizing on the part of this administration and conservatives in general who advance these things. And the first is busting unions, getting worker benefits out of it. You know, as I've said many times, you can summarize the entire conservative agenda in two words: cheap labor.
Cheap labor.
There you go. So it's boiling that down. You know, getting rid of the unions, getting rid of worker protections, getting, you know, all that stuff. Number one, and number two, giving more money to their buddies, to their cronies, to the people who contribute to the Republican Party and to the Democratic Party, for that matter. I mean, this is not something that that either party has a lock on. All the Republicans are the most, you know, aggressive proponents of it. You've got, in fact, a lobbyist as the chairman of the Republican National Committee, Ed Gillespie. But that's it. That's amazing, Ryan. I mean, frankly, having been in the world of private business for 30 years or more, I'm not sure. You know, companies come and go. People come and go. We went through this with our airport screeners. We saw the failures of saying, okay, we're going to put our security in the hands of people who make the same as Burger King employees. And you know, oh my, that's incredible. Ryan, thanks for the information.
Thanks, Tom.
And thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mary in Southern Illinois on the line. Hey, Mary.
Hi. You were talking about the problem we have with the insurances.
Yes.
Here. And Illinois, as a lot of states, is in a lot of trouble with their Medicaid. I am disabled. I live on $700 a month. I'm on Medicare primary and Medicaid secondary.
Mm-hmm.
I speak well. I'm in a power wheelchair. I have MD and CP, muscular dystrophy and cerebral palsy since birth with a brainstem problem.
Yeah.
I have many medical management problems with the osteoarthritis is caused and the leg problems and everything else. I was due to get several surgeries at Barnes Hospital. Mm. They've canceled them because of the insurance problems. And no doctors, we have no neurosurgeons here, they've all left. And none of the doctors in Illinois will take me anymore because they don't want to take on new Medicare patients.
Yeah, now here you've identified the problem of state-run medicine. It's
right.
Interesting because there's a flip side to this.
But I'm Medicare primary, and the problem is also, and I want to know, what are the people going to do? I know the regular people on Medicaid, they have pretty regular people problems,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Copay is great. But what about the people that are living like me on $700 a month, who has a personal care attendant in here every day,
right,
who has catastrophic problems and lives on $700 a month?
Yeah, and
I mean,
see,
what are we to do? There's not a lot of talk about this section of people going on.
I understand, and I agree with you, Mary. And here's the problem. Because we do have semi-single-payer health care in the United States in a small way, Medicare and the state Medicaid programs, but it's only in a small way. It's only done in a small way. It only impacts or influences a relatively small number of people. And people like yourself represent a subset or a minority set within that.
Right.
There's not a broad knowledge of the system, and therefore there's not broad political pressure to fix or reform the system.
Right.
You've really got to do it all or nothing. This is why Medicare was such an easy political football for the cons.
Medicare has decided to do with my case now, because I'm slipping between the cracks, and they can't even get the proper test done.
Yeah, well, my point is that Medicare itself
won't pay them.
But my point is, Mary, that Medicare itself is slipping between the cracks. And that's why it was such an easy political football for the conservatives, you know, Bill Frist and his buddies, who wanted to give more money to the drug companies. They said, oh, well, let's just funnel it through Medicare. We'll give them a couple $100 billion in corporate welfare.
Well, you ought to see how much medicine I'm on a day.
Yeah, and paying retail prices for it, because Medicare can't negotiate prices, which is nuts. The Pentagon can negotiate prices, but Medicare can't negotiate prices.
No.
And this is where if we had a national health care system and every single person in the nation was confronting the issues that you're confronting and dealing with it, they would clean up their act relatively quickly. You find in nations that have national health care systems that they generally tend to work. And frankly, the ones that are the weakest are the ones that are socialized or close to socialized medicine, like the British system, where the government actually owns the hospitals and many of the doctors are actually employees of the government. I'm actually not an advocate of that. What I'm an advocate of is a single payer system like we have.
The only position that will maintain and manage my case now is what we're down to, because Barnes put me back to her because they can't do anything except pain management is what they're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
She's from Canada.
Yeah, there you go.
She's from Canada, and she has taken on my case and has taken over everything. So to at least until this hopeful crisis only state passes, that I can go right back into my surgery mode. But she's going to try to keep me out of pain meanwhile, but this is a life-affecting disease, and what Medicare is saying right now, nothing sustaining, only pain medication.
Yeah, and that's the problem, Mary, and thank you for your call. I appreciate your comments, and you're raising this important, this is an important issue, and this highlights, you know, both the promise and the danger of socialized medicine, single-payer health care, which are two different things, by the way, and we have to understand they are two different things. See, with single-payer health care, you have one single, basically giant insurance company set up by the government and overseen by the government. You have a single entity, or Medicare, for example, that pays the bills. But that single agency doesn't own the hospitals, doesn't employ the doctors. It simply pays the bills. So there's still competition in the system as a whole. And the single agency has the ability to negotiate prices. And this just makes so much sense to me. And, in fact, when you look at the numbers, if we were to take the German healthcare system, the single-payer healthcare system that they have in Germany, for example, and simply apply it here in the United States, or the Canadian single-payer healthcare system, simply apply it here in the United States, and continue paying the exact same amount on a per capita basis that we are, which is the most of any nation in the world, we could easily provide for all of the health care needs of every American, the 45 million Americans who have no insurance, and the underinsured people, and fully fund, no deductibles, no copays, anything. I fully fund everything, including eye care, dental, everything, because we pay so much in the United States already right now. You say, well, that would increase taxes. Yes, but it would also make more money available in your paycheck, because you think you're not paying for that. If your employer's paying for it, you're paying for it, I'll tell you. So it's just, you know, it's like moving it around, but it's still there. We're paying it right now. The fact of the matter is that Canada pays about half of what we pay. And they have a largely functional system. I live an hour and a half from the Canadian border, and I'll tell you, there are not Canadians competing with me for access to the medical services here in Vermont. But I know of a lot of Vermonters who go to Canada to get medical care, particularly to buy prescription drugs. But also, in some cases, they'll go up there just to get sick, as it were, you know, something, let's drop in on the hospital. In fact, it's becoming a problem in Canada, turning away Americans at hospital emergency rooms in Canada, on, you know, in border areas. Why? Because you can walk in and it's free. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Joe in Greenwich, Connecticut, on the line. Hey, Joe. Oh, let me pot you up there. I'm sorry, Joe. I had the volume down. What's up?
Your comments about health care and the fire department, I think, are really, really strong. But I think you neglected to mention that the benefit from having a public fire department is that, you know, if my house burns down, it might burn down the house next door to me, or the neighborhood, or the whole city.
That's right. And that's the benefit of having a public health care system, because you have, right now, for example, one of the fastest growing diseases in the United States is tuberculosis.
Exactly.
And where is it happening? It's happening in the poor and uninsured communities and in the prisons in the United States. Now, the prisons is a whole separate thing, but it's happening largely in the poor and uninsured communities. And if we don't have a functional health care system, we're going to have more contagious illnesses among us. And even those folks who are making millions of dollars a year and have, you know, full Blue Cross and Blue Shield or whatever it may be, and they can pay for it, they're going to be exposed to these things.
We're all in the same boat.
That's
I think, sadly enough, that a couple of cities had to burn down in history before people understood that.
Yeah.
Or neighborhoods.
Yeah, I need to do more research on that, because I don't know where the Great Chicago Fire, my relatives actually lived in Chicago around that time, where the Great Chicago Fire fits into that story. You know, it'd be interesting to find out.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Love your show, Tom.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. You're in the Democracy Zone. The free speech zone. A real free speech zone. No barbed wire here. No guards ready to haul you off and handcuff you if you say you don't like George Bush. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. On Saturday, as hundreds gathered in San Francisco's Union Square for a rally in solidarity with locked-out hotel workers, Mayor Gavin Newsom announced at his office across town that a deal had been reached to suspend the stalemate for a 60-day cooling-off period. Vinny Lombardo has more.
Unite Here Local 2 members who'd been working without a union contract since August 14th struck at four San Francisco hotels September 29th and were subsequently locked out at 10 others by the Multi-Employer Group, a consortium of San Francisco's 14 largest hotels. Rory O'Connor, a bellman at the Four Seasons, says the workers wanted a wage increase but voted for a two-week strike when the hotels tried to eliminate retiree medical, prescription, and dental coverage from about 1,000 Local 2 members.
We've accepted lower wage increases in return for good benefits. It sounds like it's part of the compensation package.
Another sticking point is the contract's length. Union members say they'd like to renegotiate in 2 years while the hotels want a 5-year deal. To Do, Secretary Treasurer of Unite Here Local 2, says the union also wants to synchronize San Francisco hotel contracts with other cities.
We bring our fight to across North America City. We bring our fight to Hawaii, to Monterey, to Chicago, to New York, to send them the message that we're not going to be isolated in San Francisco.
The rank-and-file workers at Saturday's rally were elated at the news they'd soon be back on the job and are hopeful that the publicity generated will parlay into the contract they want. For now, the pickets are down. On Tuesday, 4,300 hotel workers will start rotating back into their shifts without conditions while the talks continue. But until a deal is inked, the situation remains tenuous, and Local 2 members say they are prepared to resume the pickets if a fair contract isn't offered. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Benny Lombardo.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, we can't provide health care for all Americans. No, can't do that. That's too expensive. But despite soaring deficits, the government spending plan awaiting President Bush's signature is chock full of special items for industries and communities, notes Sharon Thiemer in this article by the Associated Press today. Despite big deficit, Congress continues packing in the pork. She notes, despite the ballooning deficit, less money for federal programs and rising unease about how government will finance the futures of Medicare and Social Security are, as she says, flourishing. Why are the legislators packing all this pork into this omnibus spending bill that was just passed, was it yesterday, the day before? Well, Frank Clemente of Public Citizen, a group started, as I recall, by Ralph Nader, one of the fine contributions to this nation that Mr. Nader made before he went off the edge. Or did he? Time will tell. As I said, we're trying to get him on the program to discuss that. Anyhow, Frank Clemente, Public Citizen, says they do it because they can get away with it. The article continues, when Bush took office, he promised to cut pet projects from the federal budget, but the president has yet to veto a single spending bill. Now, he hasn't vetoed a thing. The targeted spending, this is amazing. John McCain got up on the floor of the Senate and gave this little speech. He pointed out that there was, in this bill, among other things, there was $1 million allocated for the Wild American Salmon, the Wild American Shrimp Initiative. And, no, I'm sorry, we can't afford to pay for health care for kids or for the unemployed or the underinsured. Or we can't do that, but we can pay for the Wild American Shrimp Initiative. And McCain says, and I quote, I'm hoping that the appropriators could explain to me why we need $1 million for this. Are American shrimp unruly and lacking initiative? Why does the U.S. taxpayer need to fund this No Shrimp Left Behind Act? And as you may be able to guess, McCain on the floor, you know, talking about this, nobody responded. Now, here's the interesting thing. It goes beyond that. Of course, nobody responded. Probably McCain himself had a few of his pet projects tacked into here. I'm not saying he did. I'm saying I'd be amazed if he didn't, frankly. This is just the feeding frenzy of Congress, right? And in fact, it's what local people want their elected representatives to do. Bring money back to the local community. There's this whole thing about, you know, the red states take more in tax dollars than they spend. The blue states spend more tax dollars than they take in. But here's the kicker. The spending documents don't identify who proposed each item or why, so you have no idea who put what into the bill. This another evidence of a broken system, let's say. Just slightly broken. We need to get involved and fix it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Walmart has bowed to the will of the Chinese Labor Federation. The world's biggest retailer, well known for its anti-union stance, said on Monday that it would allow the federation to organize stores in that country. The All China Federation of Trade Unions issued a threat in October that it would sue Walmart and other international companies if they refused to set up union branches in their China operations. The federation is the only union organizing body in that country and is controlled by the Communist Party. Walmart operates 39 stores in China that employ 20,000 workers. Currently, the only Walmart in the world with an accredited union is located north of Quebec City in Canada.
Thousands of people marched across India this week to protest Coke's water extraction program that they say is threatening their livelihoods.
It began in Balia, which is where there's one Coke plant, and marching to another Coke plant in Mediganj, 150 miles away in northeastern India.
Brian Hirsch, field organizer with Corporate Accountability International. He says Coke is turning water from a basic human right into an unaffordable luxury.
India has a lot less groundwater regulations, and so they've got away with things like going into one community where they dried up hundreds of public hand-pumped wells, and now there's not enough water to meet basic needs. In another community, Mediganj, the water tables have dropped 40 feet, and actually over 40 feet, and it's been devastating to farmers. There's not enough water to irrigate crops.
The United Nations estimates that two-thirds of the world's population will not have enough water by 2025. Corporate Accountability International is demanding Coke never reopen its Pakimata plant, close its plant in Mediganj, and pay for damage done to affected communities.
A pickup truck allegedly trying to break through a picket line at a Ormec Corporation aluminum plant has struck and injured a union member. Monday was the first day of a strike organized by the United Steelworkers of America at a plant located in Hannibal, Ohio. Chuck Ballard, president of USWA Local 5760, says member Bill Rose was injured when a truck belonging to Jabo Supply Corporation charged through the line and ran over his leg. More than 1,300 employees walked off the job Monday, demanding that Ormec postpone a hearing with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court concerning a reorganization plan. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. For the first time since the early 70s, the number of foreign students enrolled in U.S. colleges and universities has declined. A survey released on November 15th lists the war on terrorism as the number one reason. Titled Open Doors 2004 and published by the Institute of International Education, the number of students who came to the United States to study last year dropped by 5%, and incomplete statistics this year suggest that number could be down another 6%. Many students, especially from Islamic countries, are finding it more difficult to obtain visas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part.
In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
George W. says that one of his top three legislative priorities is, quote, lawsuit reform, to keep us pesky citizens from suing corporations. Frivolous lawsuits, he calls them. But I wonder if his legislation will go the other way, too, stopping corporations from filing frivolous lawsuits against us ordinary Joes and Jills. Take the case of Alvis Coatings, Inc., an outfit that makes spray-on siding for homes. Hordes of unhappy customers have complained about the poor quality of its spray-on stuff. But rather than make amends or, in the best free enterprise tradition, improve its product, Alvis has unleashed its corporate legal beagles to sue a Georgia couple that were merely trying to get a little justice over what they consider a rip-off. Alan and Linda Townsend paid more than $16,000 for an Alvis spray-on job on their home, an unsightly job that left them decidedly unhappy. So they used their First Amendment free speech rights to create a website about their experience with Alvis's product. Soon, other angry Alvis customers began posting their own stories on the Townsend's website, telling how the coating on their homes had cracked, bubbled, and buckled. Next thing you know, the corporation sued Alan and Linda, asserting that the couple's website defames its product, confuses other consumers, and infringes on Alvis's trademarks. Alvis demanded $75,000 in damages plus punitive damages and attorney's fees. Such a judgment could ruin the Townsends, a middle-class family whose entire home is valued at about $150,000. Of course, corporations file such suits hoping to scare off any critics. But Alan and Linda have not backed off. Theirs has become a crucial case about online free speech. As long as this stuff is on our house, says Linda, we're going to talk about it. This is Jim Hightower saying, to encourage the Townsends in this landmark case, call Public Citizen, 202-588-1000.
Good game, Mike.
Thanks. Hey, by the way, how was the doctor the other day?
Good, but my cholesterol's 200. It's a little high.
Yeah, I'm around 760.
760? You're kidding me.
Pretty impressive, huh?
No, not impressive. Not impressive at all. What are you on, some sort of butter diet?
Yeah, you know, I figured at 760, getting a loan on the new car should be no problem.
Loan? What are you talking about, man? You're not going to live long enough to pay back a loan.
There's physical health, and then there's financial health. With Score Power from Equifax, you'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for just $14.95. It's the first step toward healthy credit, and a score of 760 is pretty healthy. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's E-Q-U-I-F-A-X. Equifax.
Yeah, I figure I can get up to around 790 by the end of the year, you know, if I'm lucky.
Look, a little advice.
Yeah?
Eat a vegetable, a smoothie, something, man.
Get the power. ScorePower at Equifax.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, with archives at whiterosesociety.org, and dropping to our chat room. It's pretty full today, actually. It's quite remarkable. Go to TomHartman.com, click live chat. It'll get you over there. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. And Tom Hayden is with us. Tom Hayden of, boy, your CV is huge. I mean, I remember you from 30 years ago, Tom. I'm so pleased to have you with us on the program.
Thank you, Tom.
And bring us up to date on what you're doing right now.
What am I doing right now? I guess I was asked to be on the program because of something I wrote about the anti-war movement.
Yes. Yeah.
In general, I'm teaching and researching and writing. I'm at Occidental College. I teach a course on social movements. I'm a social science advisor at 5 inner-city schools in Los Angeles.
That's great. That is excellent.
And And my 4.5-year-old just gave me a cold. Other than that, I'm fine.
Well, I hope you get over it quickly.
I will.
I'm sorry I didn't have your bio right here in front of me, because apparently your booker hadn't gotten back with me on it, and so I wanted to make sure that you had an opportunity to lay out whatever should be said. Tom, you wrote a great piece recently about the parallels or analogies between what's going on in Iraq and what's going on in Vietnam, or what happened in Vietnam. And as I recall, and I'd like you to just lay that out a little bit for us, if you don't mind. What do you see there?
Well, I think we're at a point where the peace movement types have to face this issue, along with everybody else, of how we get out of Iraq. And
yeah.
There's a curious thing happening, it seems to me. Most people think getting in was a mistake, but they've been manipulated into believing that now we're there, we shouldn't leave. That would be a mistake.
Right.
And to me, that's not rational. So if you do the comparison to Vietnam, worst case, Vietnam should remind us that we don't play out with all the cards. We are not the dominant power. We were driven out of Vietnam. It was chaos. People were getting on helicopters. The U.S. ambassador was scrambling away with the flag. I mean, it was as big a debacle as you can imagine. And yet, 30 years later, who remembers? We have normal relationships with Vietnam. We're interested in their oil. They're interested in joining the WTO. I mean, you wonder, what was the 2 million deaths about? So before we panic about getting out of Iraq, I think Vietnam should remind us that life does move on, and
yeah.
We should begin to focus on how to get out, not how to stay indefinitely.
Yeah, well said. And I'd like to talk with you about specifically what you think should be done. First, though, let's get into some of the other issues or analogies. Here, just in the last couple of days, we've seen several Shia clerics, leaders of the Shia, who have been involved in politics, assassinated as they traveled through largely Sunni regions.
Yes.
It sure looks to me
like...
Glad
you noticed that. I don't think that had been reported much.
No, it hasn't been, and it sure looks to me like a civil war. In fact, I've been saying on this program now for the better part of at least 4 or 5 months that we are in the middle of a full-blown civil war, and it's going to become increasingly obvious as time goes on, and these events of this last week are making it just so conspicuously clear. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago about how nobody in our government really seriously thinks that Alawi may even survive the elections. I mean, politically, and
really,
and because the what's happening is Sistani and Sadr and what's his name? Who is the guy? The guy that was feeding all the intelligence to Rumsfeld and everything.
Chalabi.
Yeah, Chalabi. Thank you very much. And Chalabi are forming this alliance. And
yep.
and Chalabi is connected with Iran. I mean, it turns out that, you know, all that time that he was in the Pentagon with Doug Feith and all these guys, he was actually smuggling our secrets into Iran. And then when this kind of came out, he's in Iraq, what does he do? He flees to Iran. And Iran, of course, had this multi-year war with Saddam, and they'd lost millions of people. They wanted to rejoin. Iran, mostly Shia, wanted to rejoin with the 60% of Iraq, which is Shia. So they got us to do it for them, in my opinion. Now, they just maneuvered the Bush administration. We're acting like, you know, idiot childs. They got maneuvered into doing the dirty work of Iran, and now Iran and the Shia are, you know, the Chalabi and all these guys, they're getting together, and they're saying, hey, let's be a political force. Yes, let's have elections. It would be wonderful if we had elections. We're 60% of the population. Are we going to have to do as the Algerians did, or as the Egyptians did, when it looked like a popular Muslim society was going to come in and take over? Are we going to have to go in there with a fist and say, no, you can't have elections now? I mean, where is this going to go?
I don't know. I just I would note that they put off the slaughter in Fallujah, and they put off the Iraqi elections until after our own U.S. election.
Yeah.
It was the Kerry campaign and the anti-war movement that caused that that delay. And now it seems to be no holds barred. But I don't know where they're going. They certainly, I would not quarrel with what you said, except to say we should not imply that that the Iraqis are bound for civil war. It seems to me that we're creating the conditions ourselves.
Right.
In any event, it's possible. One possible hopeful, and I use it kind of cynically, but a hopeful scenario is that the U.S. will sponsor the elections. Somehow the Shiites, under Sistani's tutelage, will win. They will ask the United States to leave.
And we will do so, yeah.
That would be my advice.
Well, I think that that's what they're trying to do. I think that that's the direct...
I think they're more inclined to want to have a permanent presence.
We're building military bases
with
there.
Bases.
Yeah.
And with a threat to Iran, a threat to Syria, an alliance with the Israelis, and a watchful eye on the oil.
Yeah. And this is the terrible conundrum that this administration is going to face, because they are so wed to this neocon notion of having a heavy footprint in the Middle East, of saying domestically, hey, forget about energy independence. We're not going to nurture alternative energy sources. We're going to continue importing oil. And because we're going to continue to act like a heroin addict, and the main supplier of this particular type of heroin on the planet is the Middle East, we're going to have to, you know, stay close to that supplier. And we've already pulled our people out of Saudi Arabia, as Osama bin Laden demanded. And
Omar, yes.
Yeah. And where are we going to put them if we don't have these bases in Iran and or Iraq rather? I mean, is Dubai enough? Is Kuwait enough? And it's almost like they're painting themselves. Well, it's not almost like this administration, it seems, in many ways, is painting itself into a corner. It's going to be.
We can only speculate, but I think one thing that we can do something about is the silence of the Democratic Party. I mean, I think the peace movement paid its dues. We zipped our lips and supported John Kerry all the way through this campaign because it was an issue of getting rid of Bush. It was a referendum on Iraq. But now that it's over, we should expect that the Democrats become an opposition party, not a Me Too party, not an echo of the Republicans. This stuff in Fallujah wouldn't be happening if Democrats were speaking out. Imagine the role reversal. If Kerry had won, what the Republicans would be screaming about in terms of his betrayal of the American interest and so on.
Yeah.
So I hope that the... the peace movement puts pressure on the Democrats. I also think that we need to make alliances with the conservative Republicans who have bided their time, but they're the Pat Buchanans and so on. They're very much against the Iraq policy. I think we need to work with the military families because the restlessness and alienation among the soldiers is apparent. We've got to find ways, in other words, to now try to pull the plug on this matter, because I don't think you're going to get a decision out of Washington to leave until there's a
strong political pressure
that we can't go anywhere.
Yeah, and then they'll declare victory and leave. You know, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I wrote a piece for Common Dreams that was fairly broadly circulated called "How to Take Back America," in which I suggested that progressives should try to infiltrate the Democratic Party and take it over, because this is what the extreme conservatives did in the 60s and 70s with the Republican Party and achieved success in the 80s and all the way through to today. And the Democratic Party just seemed rudderless and directionless, and it seems to me that there's a real battle going on for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party right now. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that, to what extent you think Howard Dean may or may not play a role in that. And
well, some people that come out of the Dean campaign, the Kucinich campaign, are trying to do just that. They're forming Progressive Democrats of America, and they've got caucuses in about 30 states. Red states as well as blue states, and
that's great.
If they can, what happens is the progressives can only unite temporarily around a candidate. It remains to be seen if they can unite around the vision of rebuilding a progressive Democratic Party, or at least a progressive base in the Democratic Party. But that's what they're trying to do.
And yeah.
I mean, without that, of course, the silence from on high from the Democrats will continue, and that is what gives cover to the Bush administration's activities. Not only in Iraq, but around the world.
Well, this is what happened in the 30s. I mean, you had in 1872, the progressives and populists splitting off from the Republicans, and then throughout the 1870s and 1880s, the Grange movement rising up, and all these progressive and populist movements throughout the late 19th and early 20th century. But they really didn't coalesce and essentially infiltrate and take over the Democratic Party until the Great Depression, until after the Great Depression and Roosevelt coming to power. And do you think, we have about a minute left here, Tom Hayden, do you think that some sort of an economic crisis is going to be necessary to precipitate this, or do you think that we can that we can just push for this, we can get enough people involved in this?
I think we need an independent social movement that tries to influence the Democratic Party, and people can try to infiltrate it as well, I suppose. But I think the unifying issue is going to be more democracy versus less.
Mm-hmm.
More democracy versus empire.
Instant runoff voting, local.
Yes, everybody. Yes, more democracy. That's what we should stand for. And I guess that music means that we're out of time.
Yeah, we got it. We just wrapped it up.
Good work. And,
well,
thank
you.
I'll stay in touch.
Thank you, Tom Hayden. Thanks so much for being with us. Your article was on Alternet on November 23rd. I'm sure there's still a link up on Alternet to it, isn't there?
Yes.
Okay,
sure.
Great.
Thank you.
Hold on the line for just a second, Tom. Oh, there he goes. Okay, thank you. Tom Hartman with you, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Is you glad you got nothing to feel? Is you glad that it's all so real? Hey, say somebody shout.
And welcome back, my friends. Our quote for the day comes from Thomas Jefferson, September 6th, 1789. A letter he wrote, but with respect to future debt, would it not be wise and just for that nation to declare in the Constitution they are forming that neither the legislature nor the nation itself can validly contract more debt than they may pay within their own age or within the term of 19 years? 19 years being Jefferson's notion of what a generation was. Basically, every 20 years you have a new generation. This was his point. In other words, if we're going to borrow money, we, through our elected officials, we should be paying it back. Seems reasonable. Try telling that to George W., however. The Reverend Jerry Falwell, National Chairman of the Faith and Values Coalition and Moral Majority Founder, there's an oxymoron for you, labeled the National Organization for Women, actually it's not so much an oxymoron, the Moral Majority is neither. That's the reality. There is a majority of Americans who are highly moral. But the capital M, brand name moral majority, in my opinion, is neither moral nor the majority. Nonetheless, the Reverend Jerry Falwell labeled the National Organization of Women, or for women, N-O-W, the National Order of Witches, and said he was going to invite People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, to Christians' men's gatherings called Wild Game Night, where wild animals are eaten, so they can sit there and suffer. He also called Americans United for Separation of Church and State an anti-Christ group. Now, Americans United for Separation of Church and State is run by the Reverend Barry Lynn, who is both an attorney and an ordained minister. He's executive director. A number of other Christian leaders serve on that board's group of trustees. But here's really the agenda. This is now he's calling the National Order of Witches. From a speech by Jerry Falwell, and I quote, quoting the Reverend Falwell, "I listen to feminists and all those radical gals. These women just need a man in the house. That's all they need. Most of the feminists need a man to tell them what time of day it is and to lead them home." End quote. Jerry Falwell. Women just need a man in the house. Of course, you'll recall right after 9/11, Falwell and Robertson accused feminists, as well as gays, lesbians, and progressives, as being responsible for having, quote, helped, end quote, the terrorist attacks of 9/11. So, Jerry Falwell back in the news. What a surprise. In the meantime, the United States is threatening to take punitive steps over the Ukraine election. This is fascinating. Here we have an election where we're saying, You know, the exit polls disagree with the results, and therefore we think it's fraudulent. But it's not the U.S. election, it's the Ukrainian election, and the Ukrainian people are agreeing with this notion. And we're stirring it up. I mean, we're really pushing this thing to help make it happen in the international press, which is giving great cover to these guys. And, you know, the idea that they're, by and large, most of them are pro-American, as it were. Well, Yushchenko, actually, the Western candidate, the one who lost the actual vote but won the exit polls, is, you know, wants to align the Ukraine with the United States. Whereas Yukanovich, who is Yanukovych, who is the current prime minister, wants to align them with the Russian Republic, with Mr. Putin, and looks like the Western aligned guy won the exit polls 54-43, whereas the actual vote went 49-46 in favor of the other guy. Got a lot of people upset. How does this relate to what's happening in the United States? We'll talk about that in a minute, and we'll... I thought we were going to have a report from the Talk Radio News Service. We'll see how it goes. 29 minutes past the hour.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Walmart has bowed to the will of the Chinese Labor Federation. The world's biggest retailer, well known for its anti-union stance, said on Monday that it would allow the federation to organize stores in that country. The All China Federation of Trade Unions issued a threat in October that it would sue Walmart and other international companies if they refused to set up union branches in their China operations. The federation is the only union organizing body in that country and is controlled by the Communist Party. Walmart operates 39 stores in China that employ 20,000 workers. Currently, the only Walmart in the world with an accredited union is located north of Quebec City in Canada.
Thousands of people marched across India this week to protest Coke's water extraction program that they say is threatening their livelihoods.
It began in Balia, which is where there's one Coke plant, and marching to another Coke plant in Mediganj, 150 miles away in northeastern India.
Brian Hirsch, field organizer with Corporate Accountability International. He says Coke is turning water from a basic human right into an unaffordable luxury.
India has a lot less groundwater regulations, and so they've got away with things like going into one community where they dried up hundreds of public hand-pumped wells, and now there's not enough water to meet basic needs. In another community, Mediganj, the water tables have dropped 40 feet, and actually over 40 feet, and it's been devastating to farmers. There's not enough water to irrigate crops.
The United Nations estimates that two-thirds of the world's population will not have enough water by 2025. Corporate Accountability International is demanding Coke never reopen its Pakimata plant, close its plant in Mediganj, and pay for damage done to affected communities.
A pickup truck allegedly trying to break through a picket line at a Ormec Corporation aluminum plant has struck and injured a union member. Monday was the first day of a strike organized by the United Steelworkers of America at a plant located in Hannibal, Ohio. Chuck Ballard, president of USWA Local 5760, says member Bill Rose was injured when a truck belonging to Jabo Supply Corporation charged through the line and ran over his leg. More than 1,300 employees walked off the job Monday, demanding that Ormec postpone a hearing with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court concerning a reorganization plan. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. For the first time since the early 70s, the number of foreign students enrolled in U.S. colleges and universities has declined. A survey released on November 15th lists the war on terrorism as the number one reason. Titled Open Doors 2004 and published by the Institute of International Education, the number of students who came to the United States to study last year dropped by 5%, and incomplete statistics this year suggest that number could be down another 6%. Many students, especially from Islamic countries, are finding it more difficult to obtain visas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's becoming more precarious for failing to toe the line in what I believe in. Sounds like freedom to me.
And welcome back. Yeah, the Sons of Liberty, we time to return. We could maybe they're reincarnated. Maybe I mean, who knows? Frankly, I don't have an opinion about that, but the Sons of Liberty, back. It's time for the Sons of Liberty to come back. Speaking of the Sons and Daughters of Liberty, speaking of the Children of Liberty, here we are with Ellen Ratner as well of the Talk Radio News Service, a member of the tribe, as it were, the tribe of people who believe that we should have liberty and democracy in America. Right, Ellen?
For sure. I've actually been recently just on Fox a couple seconds ago, which is why I'm late, talking about this 9/11 bill.
Oh,
I mean, when you really read why they're fighting about it, it is so incredible, Tom, that this city has come to a standstill on an important bill because it's a turf war.
Now, the Pentagon is putting out the story, Ellen, and General the other day came out and said this, that that I wanted to say Tommy Franks, but I know it's not. It's anyhow that
Abizade probably.
No, the one with the shorter name, the one syllable name, which is why Franks is
all right.
Stuck.
Okay.
But anyhow, well, here we are. Here we both are with that. He said basically that the problem is that if you're routing intelligence through an intelligence czar, then the people on the battlefield won't have access to intelligence, and it sounded to me like that was just, you know, nonsense. I mean, you could easily fix that with a simple workaround by saying the czar controls the senior management of the system, but that doesn't mean that the system can't
work.
Let's
take U2s, for example, or AWACS.
Yeah.
Either one. What happens is you can actually do intelligence air-to-air. In other words, they can take intelligence from one of those planes and get it into another plane.
Right.
They can get it on the ground. They can get it anywhere. There's no reason in the world why two agencies couldn't have it simultaneously. And it actually might be very helpful for both agencies to have it simultaneously, since both can do their own analysis, and perhaps they'll come up with the same thing, but perhaps they won't, which makes it even more interesting.
Yeah, but what this boils down to is that Rumsfeld and the Pentagon basically don't want anybody telling them how to spend their money. Is that not it? I mean, isn't that
right.
It? Where it's pretty much who gets to control the cash? Because right now the Pentagon controls 80% of the total intelligence budget for the United States.
That's right. That's right. The other interesting story in Washington is the United States is not very happy with what's happened with the Ukrainian elections. Why? Because the exit polls in
yes.
the Ukrainian
I was just talking about that.
Turned out to be very different than what the election said. And we are objecting to that.
Yeah, and we've got 100,000 people on the streets in Kiev yesterday, and I'm assuming it's continuing today.
Well, and Colin Powell issued a statement just a few minutes ago saying that the United States was not essentially buying into the elections. And what's also interesting about this is that Putin has really pushed the guy that won, supposedly.
Right.
And, of course, this is the same man that the president looked in the eye and said he trusted.
Yeah. Well, he said, actually, I think he said he looked him in the eye and he saw somebody who had a similar soul to his or something
right.
like something, yeah. something that, a soul brother.
Worrisome. You know,
yeah, it was a little worrisome, actually, to me. Because Putin was the head of the KGB. I mean, this guy.
And George Bush's father was head of the CIA.
Yeah. Well, maybe they. Yeah, okay. So there you go.
So those are the two big stories looming around as Thanksgiving comes.
Yeah. And what about the situation in Iraq? How is that playing out? It seems to me that the civil war is breaking out, that we're seeing now the Sunnis starting to kill Shia, particularly the religious leaders, two of them just in the last few days have been assassinated. Prominent Shia clerics who are going to get politically involved, and like everybody's jockeying to get into position for the elections in January. But this really is looking like a civil war to me. Is there anybody in Washington taking this seriously, or is everybody just kind of hoping we can kind of blunder our way through it until January?
I think that the prevailing wisdom is we should blunder our way through it and let them take care of itself.
Yeah.
Now, some of us said, okay, we don't agree with the war. We never agreed with the war. But once they had, in quote, had victory in the Baghdad, we should have just sent in the blue hats, let the United Nations handle it, declare victory, and gotten the heck out of there. But, of course, we're not going to do it because we have to bring democracy.
There's a bigger issue. there's another issue here, though, Alan, and that's that really concerns me. I mean, I think that everybody agrees that the old Kissinger Vietnam strategy would probably be the best thing, to declare victory and leave, right? And as quickly as possible, because we have become an irritant. We have become part of the problem there. But
is you really have three separate countries.
That's right, and they were before 1918. They were three separate provinces of Turkey as part of the Ottoman Empire. But what we have right now is a situation where, on the one hand, we are moving toward an electoral process that may well result in a Shiite government that asks us to leave, that will give us an opportunity to leave with some semblance of dignity. And yet, at the same time, we are building 17 permanent military bases in that country, and we're aggressively continuing the building.
3,000 people.
Yeah, and the largest, one of the largest embassies in the world, and we are not slowing that down. Bechtel is over there scraping up ground like crazy, building these army bases.
When I was in Iraq, that was a year ago, June. Bechtel was already having these conferences with all the Iraqis. They were going to give them, 50% of the deal, but Bechtel was already doing all the planning.
Yeah, yeah. So if it seems to me that there's this schizophrenia within this administration, and we're getting mixed messages out of them, although actually nobody, and maybe it's just even wishful thinking to think that the administration is serious about getting out, because nobody in the administration is talking about getting out. Maybe they really seriously intend to try to win this war, unlike we did in Vietnam, and establish permanent bases, and they think that they can do it the way that we did in Germany, for example, after World War II. But what they don't realize is that in Germany and Japan, all the people in Germany and Japan, there was this collective consensus among the average person in Germany and Japan that their nation had gone insane. When the Germans were confronted, and I know this from having lived in Germany and having done a lot of business in Japan and having very dear, close friends who are Japanese, and some of them old enough to remember this, that in both of these countries, these people, the average person, many of the average people, either they were afraid to speak up or they bought into, Hitler and Tojo, into these notions of racial superiority and world peace through domination and empire and all this stuff. And when they were confronted with the horrors of what they had done, the rape of Nanking, the Holocaust after the war, they just kind of woke up from this collective national nightmare and said, holy cow, we really screwed up. And that's why not a single American soldier has been shot, has been killed in Germany or Japan since the end of World War II. There wasn't this ongoing insurgency against us. Whereas in Iraq, they're not looking at us like the people who came in and helped them
also
stop their insanity.
Also, our troop levels in Germany were much, much higher.
Yeah, but
as was aid levels, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. But there wasn't the resistance. There just wasn't. I mean, there were a few diehard SS guys who were basically just, they knew that their time was up and they figured that they would go down with the ship, as it were. But it was a joke, I mean, the Japanese in the jungles of Borneo. But that wasn't really what was going on. And that's why the German and Japanese experience in World War II is so unique. And whenever cons try to bring this out and say, well, we could have done that in Vietnam, what we did in Germany, or we could have done, or we can do it in Iraq, what we did in Germany, the Iraqi people haven't been collectively insane. The Vietnamese weren't collectively insane. Instead, they're nationalists. They're saying, we just want our nation back, please. And you can't fight nationalism. And so how do these guys think that they're going to do this?
Well, Your guess is as good as mine. I mean, and now, if you look in the papers today, they're even talking about the fact that the Army National Guard is having recruiting problems.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So here we are, what, 6 months away from a draft?
Right. I think so. I mean, or something.
Yeah. Or $25,000 sign-up bonuses.
Something.
Yeah.
But they're going to have to do something to get those numbers up or nothing.
Yeah, and John McCain came out yesterday, said we need 50,000 more soldiers in Iraq right now. 50,000 more right now. And so, anyhow. Okay.
Somebody's probably running for president.
Yeah, what a surprise. What a surprise.
Well, happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Ellen. You too. I'll be here and on the air, by the way. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Oh, you will. Yeah? Well, I'll see if I can give you a call.
If you can, that would be great.
Right after the Macy's Parade.
We would love to have you on the program tomorrow.
Okay.
And I hope you have a wonderful Turkey Day.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call, Ellen. Good to hear from you. It's Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Back to this issue of the exit polls. I just had to share with you this story that was in the Oregonian. Margie Boulay, who has a seemingly French-sounding name, she's actually an American, wrote this article, and it's actually about a woman by the name of Tina Knight, with a K, who is a 57-year-old Portland State University student. She's working on her master's degree in adult education, and she decided to take a week off from classes in November and go down to Florida, because that's where her mother lives, and volunteer as a poll watcher. She is not affiliated with any political party. But she thought this would be a cool opportunity to see, you know, help out the American political process and all, you know, an idealist, a believer in America, a believer in democracy. And so she volunteered for this thing called Election Protection, Voter Election Protection, which was co-sponsored by the League of Women Voters, American Families United, and the American Constitution Society, all nonpartisan groups. They have no affiliation with any political party. They, all of them, openly and outspokenly say, we have no dog in this fight, other than democracy. So she joins, and she flies down to Florida, stays with her mother, and I just have to share with you this story, what she says. Margie Boulay wrote this for the Oregonian. After a Monday night training session for 300 volunteers from across the United States, Tina arrived at 6:20 a.m. election day at Palm Beach County Precinct Number 7120. Tina says, there were over 100 people waiting to vote. This is 40 minutes before the polls open at 7 in the morning. Right? Most people in that neighborhood, Tina says, were blue and pink collar workers, immigrants and retirees. These are people who have shift jobs. They can't afford to miss work without getting docked or even fired, end quote. So that's why they're there at 6 o'clock in the morning. They want to vote and then get to work because, you know, they don't want to lose their jobs. Soon after the polls opened, however, problems began. Now, this being a blue or pink collar neighborhood, it's probably, well, who knows which way it would go. Anyhow, soon after the polls opened, problems began. Tina, quote, I started getting people from a neighborhood precinct coming to vote. They said they'd been called over the weekend and told to come here. Now, these are people who are supposed to vote in a different location. If you show up in the wrong location in Florida, they will give you a provisional ballot or they will, you know, tell you where your original precinct is and you should go there. But you can't actually vote on a normal vote. And your provisional ballot is more likely to be challenged. So these people said that over the weekend, somebody had called them and told them to go to a different polling place. Might it have been somebody working a list of registered Democrats? Tina isn't suggesting that. She's just talking about this in an entirely nonpartisan way, but that seems to be the trend, by the way. Anyhow, she says some people had even been told, while waiting in line at their correct precinct, to come here, to the precinct where Tina was, which was the wrong precinct for those folks. This, she says, or that was the first indication we got that people had been deliberately misinformed. A second incident made Tina even more angry. Another nearby voting place was a synagogue, she says. When people in that precinct went to vote, the polling place was closed. There was no notification of where they should go. And there had been no prior written or telephonic communication. They didn't know what to do. And it's no secret that the Jewish vote in Florida is largely a Democratic vote. And so here you have a synagogue that was a polling place, and they closed it. The elections officials. And there's Margie Boulay says, a few persistent voters had finally gotten calls through to county election headquarters and been told they were to vote at the precinct where Tina was monitoring. There's the people from the synagogue who were would have voted in the synagogue were supposed to come where Tina was. And she says, so our organization went to the synagogue and put up a note advising people where to come to vote. In other words, you know, go down to the school six blocks down around the corner, whatever, wherever it was. And she says, the sign disappeared. So we put up another sign with a sign watcher. As soon as he finished his shift, the sign disappeared again. Tina worked 9 hours on election day. She talked to a woman who said the voting machine had repeatedly registered the wrong presidential candidate. After 8 or 9 tries, it finally showed the candidate she'd selected. Another lady, I'm still reading from this Oregonian story by Margie Boulay. Another lady, this quoting Tina Knight, another lady said when she got to her review screen at the end of the voting process, the opposing presidential candidate was listed, not the person that she had voted for, but the other person. I'll leave it to your imagination who that might be. She called the poll worker and demanded that it be fixed. The poll worker went back through the screens and agreed the woman had voted for a different candidate than the review screen showed. Now, you've worked with computers, I imagine. I have. Most people have worked with a computer at one time or other. Do you think that if you type Ralph into a word processor that suddenly it's going to say Jim? Computers don't change information unless they're programmed to change information. They might be programmed to change the information every fifth voter, every tenth voter, every 22nd voter. So it just kind of looks like an occasional glitch. But do we know what the program was on these computers? No, we don't. Sorry. The voting machine companies tell us it's a trade secret. They don't have to tell us. So anyhow, back to Tina. The poll worker said the review screen is wrong, but just go ahead and punch the confirmation button. The woman refused. She made the poll worker cancel out the transaction if she voted again. But how many people would do that? Go against what the poll worker advised? After hearing many voters' stories, Tina says, I have absolutely no good feeling that those machines have integrity. Yeah. And not just the machines, the political machine in a state run by the president's brother. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is the Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Recently, AT&T announced it is outsourcing 140 jobs from a Massachusetts call center to New Delhi, an American trend that's providing widespread debate. WIN reporter Leanne Caldwell has more.
In his nomination speech, President Bush said the world is changing, but he will protect American jobs.
We now compete in a global market that provides new buyers for our goods, but new competition for our workers. To create jobs, we will expand trade and level the playing field to sell American goods and services across the globe.
But at the New York Society for Ethical Culture in Midtown Manhattan, National Affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine, William Greider, said American trade indebtedness to other countries, which is closely tied to wage arbitration, is breaking the shrinking middle class. The liberal magazine, The Nation, and the economically conservative, The Economist, hotly debated outsourcing. According to some studies, more than 400,000 jobs will be outsourced to cheaper markets this year, a trend that seems to be inevitable by free trade policies. Sitting on The Nation side of the table, Lori Wallach, director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, said the world of the World Trade Organization is a contradiction and that the WTO are simply handcuffs. But Clive Crook is deputy editor for The Economist. He said the American economy is the most resilient and new industries will replace those lost to outsourcing.
American unemployment, despite intense globalization of the past 2 decades now, has not gone up.
But those new industries are unknown. By the end of the debate, the audience was still split in its opinions, but an estimated 90 jobs were moved overseas in those 2 hours. For WIN, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Sometimes it's bad when the going gets tough. Yeah, we look in the mirror. Yeah, we wanna give up.
Yeah, but you don't give up. Sometimes it's tough, but you don't give up. It's just basic rule of life. Keep on moving. There are, it was a Carlos Castaneda. I was reminded today by I forget the name of the horoscopes, but by this horoscope that I got an email. It said, Carlos Castaneda said that warriors take on, see problems as opportunities, whereas ordinary people see everything as either a blessing or a curse. It's time for us all to be warriors in that castanated sense. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dave in Humboldt County, California, on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, you come so very close. I keep, you know, feeling you're within an inch of calling this as you see it, that our country has indeed been defrauded by some severely character disordered goons in the White House.
And I think it's very probable, Dave. I'm not willing to say that I'm certain of it, but I think it's very likely.
Well, I think when you do hit that point, and I already have, you're going to then redirect your energy to humiliating our media into taking a look at it and to, you know, have them at least see Bev Harris.
Well, I've been doing my best for that. I'll tell you, you know, writing the pieces that I've been writing for Common Dreams and that have been being published all around the web. The media, I don't think that any of us in the media have to be convinced in order to raise the question. I mean, that's the essence of democracy, of debate in a democratic republic, is raising questions.
I agree, but I think once we get to the point where we say all evidence suggests that's exactly what happened, now let's redirect all of our energy into overturning a fraudulent election.
Yeah, Sue made a great point in our chat room just a second ago. She said that if the machine in its summary screen was showing the vote for the other candidate, it was not only fraudulent software, phony software, but it was badly written phony software, right? It was a badly written hack or a badly written change. And another person in the chat room who actually voted in that same district said that he voted on the same DRE machine, had no problem. Therefore, obviously, some machines had different software than others.
I love what you're doing, Tom. I think you're going to connect these dots, and we're going to make a major move to undo this fraud.
Well, we've got a lot of dots here, Dave, and whether or not it's actually fraud, whether or not there's a real problem, we have the appearance of fraud. We have the probability of something, and that shouldn't be. I mean, the vote is the most essential of all of our commons. It's the essential franchise by which we run our country. And it should not be in the hands of private corporations that tell us that we have no business looking at their source code and who are active in politics. It's just plain old wrong. It's anti-democratic. It needs to change. It's the Tom Hartman Program, exposing the con in conservative.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Walmart has bowed to the will of the Chinese Labor Federation. The world's biggest retailer, well known for its anti-union stance, said on Monday that it would allow the federation to organize stores in that country. The All-China Federation of Trade Unions issued a threat in October that it would sue Walmart and other international companies if they refused to set up union branches in their China operations. The federation is the only union organizing body in that country and is controlled by the Communist Party. Walmart operates 39 stores in China that employ 20,000 workers. Currently, the only Walmart in the world with an accredited union is located north of Quebec City in Canada.
Thousands of people marched across India this week to protest Coke's water extraction program that they say is threatening their livelihoods.
It began in Balia, which is where there's one Coke plant, and marching to another Coke plant in Mediganj, 150 miles away in northeastern India.
Brian Hirsch, field organizer with Corporate Accountability International. He says Coke is turning water from a basic human right into an unaffordable luxury.
India has a lot less groundwater regulations, and so they've got away with things like going into one community where they dried up hundreds of public hand-pumped wells, and now there's not enough water to meet basic needs. In another community, Mediganj, the water tables have dropped 40 feet, and actually over 40 feet, and it's been devastating to farmers. There's not enough water to irrigate crops.
The United Nations estimates that two-thirds of the world's population will not have enough water by 2025. Corporate Accountability International is demanding Coke never reopen its Pakimata plant, close its plant in Medigonj, and pay for damage done to affected communities.
A pickup truck allegedly trying to break through a picket line at a Ormec Corporation aluminum plant has struck and injured a union member. Monday was the first day of a strike organized by the United Steelworkers of America at a plant located in Hannibal, Ohio. Chuck Ballard, president of USWA Local 5760, says member Bill Rose was injured when a truck belonging to Jabo Supply Corporation charged through the line and ran over his leg. More than 1,300 employees walked off the job Monday, demanding that Ormec postpone a hearing with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court concerning a reorganization plan. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. For the first time since the early 70s, the number of foreign students enrolled in U.S. colleges and universities has declined. A survey released on November 15th lists the war on terrorism as the number one reason. Titled Open Doors 2004 and published by the Institute of International Education, the number of students who came to the United States to study last year dropped by 5%, and incomplete statistics this year suggest that number could be down another 6%. Many students, especially from Islamic countries, are finding it more difficult to obtain visas.
You've been listening to Wind, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
One of the most despicable aspects of this year's presidential campaign was the deliberate, determined effort by the Republican Party to keep people from voting. I don't just mean the notorious efforts in Florida by first brother Jeb Bush to purge the voter rolls of thousands of eligible African Americans, but of tactics all across the country to suppress the votes of people who tend to vote Democratic. For example, before the election, U.S. Senator Kit Bond tried to sneak a provision into national law that would ban voter registration drives in public housing projects. Another sneak attack came on Election Day itself, when GOP election officials in key states like Ohio simply shorted many Democratic precincts on the number of voting machines made available. The result was that voters faced interminable waits to get to cast their ballots. Lines snaked around city blocks, forcing people to wait 7, 9, or more hours in line. Uncounted thousands of people, who after all have jobs and families to deal with, were driven away from the polls by this artificial logjam. Especially ugly, though, was the kind of racist intimidation experienced in Milwaukee. Just before the election, a flyer was distributed throughout two African-American voting wards, handed out on street corners and in barbershops by a fake group calling itself the Black Voters League. Here's some of what it said. Some warnings for election time. If you've already voted in any election this year, you can't vote in the presidential election. If you've ever been found guilty of anything, even a traffic violation, you can't vote in the presidential election. If anybody in your family has ever been found guilty of anything, you can't vote in the presidential election. If you violate any of these laws, you can get 10 years in prison and your children will be taken away from you. This is Jim Hightower saying, in America, everyone should be encouraged to vote. This is still America, isn't it?
Okay, people, what do we have?
Doesn't look good. Patient is male, 28 years old, trying to get a loan for a new car.
They're checking his credit now.
What's the status?
Looks like he's got some credit problems.
Late payments?
Yes, doctor.
Too many credit cards.
Affirmative.
I've got 6 credit cards and rising. Make that 7.
I've seen this before. What's his credit score?
No response.
What?
He doesn't know, doctor.
Well, he went for a loan without knowing his credit score?
We're losing the loan.
Why didn't he use Score Power from Equifax?
Clear.
How many people do we have to lose?
How's your financial health? Find out with Score Power. From Equifax, you'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score. All for just $14.95. It's the first step toward healthy credit. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Doctor, come quick. There's a woman trying to buy a house without her credit score.
It's an epidemic. Run away.
Get the power. ScorePower at Equifax.com.
Thank you.
rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Here, this story says it all. Joe Blundo in the Columbus Dispatch writes, "The flood of American liberals sneaking across the border into Canada has intensified in the past week, sparking calls for increased patrols to stop the illegal immigration. The re-election of President Bush is prompting the exodus among left-leaning citizens who fear they'll soon be required to hunt, pray, and agree with Bill O'Reilly. Canadian border farmers say it's not uncommon to see dozens of sociology professors, animal rights activists, and Unitarians crossing their fields at night." Manitoba farmer Red Greenfield said, his acreage borders North Dakota, he says, "I went out to milk the cows the other day, and there was a Hollywood producer huddled in the barn. The producer was cold, exhausted, and hungry. He asked me if I could spare a latte and some free-range chicken. When I said I didn't have any, he left. Didn't even get a chance to show him my screenplay, eh?" In an effort to stop the illegal aliens, Greenfield erected higher fences, but the liberals scaled them, so he tried installing speakers that blare Rush Limbaugh across the fields. "Not really effective," he said. "Liberals still got through, and Rush annoyed the cows so much they wouldn't give milk." Well, so, of course, tongue-in-cheek. But I think people are starting to, you know, it's starting to sink in what happened. And yet the recount, it's fascinating how in Ohio, Blackwell, the Secretary of State, Ken Blackwell, who was also the head of the Bush for President campaign in that state, which is something that shouldn't be, but that's a whole other rant. Blackwell is stalling the certification, and he's making it more and more difficult for any kind of a recount. The same thing is going on in Florida right now. We talked to Bev Harris yesterday. They're using all kinds of legal shenanigans to try to not comply with Freedom of Information Act filings and public record requests. Say, no, we don't have to show you that. We don't have to give you that information. Where are we going with this? 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. TomHartman.com, our website. If you want to drop in, click live chat. It'll take you into the live chat room sponsored by the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. And it's been well full for a couple of hours here of folks. Interesting conversations going on in there. Let's take a call here to start the hour. Martha in Massachusetts is on the line. Hey, Martha, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. I'll be here tomorrow on Thanksgiving, by the way, doing the program live. In fact, we've got some really fascinating guests lined up for it, and it's going to be a good show.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. I had a question for you. I've been reading a lot of newsletters from progressive publications, and there's more and more of them out there. But I read something really interesting and startling. And it was a comparison between George Bush and Hitler. And somewhere in the article it said that George Bush's grandfather was a heavy supporter of Hitler's cause.
Well, yes and no. Here are the two sources of that. George Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush, was a United States senator. Before that, he was a partner in Brown Brothers Harriman, a banking company in New York, as well as a whole bunch of other business interests. And they had spun off a joint venture with, as I recall, Thielmann or something like that, a German company. And they were continuing to do business with Hitler and had been doing business with Hitler throughout the build-up to the war and even after we entered the war. And, in fact, they lost that company. It was shut down by Roosevelt under the Trading with the Enemy Act. And but Bush's grandfather at that point, his fingerprints are a little remote. You know, he was like a director of the company, not, you know, running the thing on a day-to-day basis. There's still an argument over how much he knew, what he knew, when he knew it, all those kinds of things. Those issues are being debated. And many Americans, up until the time we actually entered World War II and up until we were hit at Pearl Harbor, many Americans and the majority of the Republican Party and all of the Republican members of the House and Senate were opposed to the United States entering the war in Europe. Father Coughlin was on the radio every day ranting about it. The extent of the horrors of Europe was not known in America, and there was a widespread. It certainly wasn't unanimous. I wasn't alive during that time, so I have to rely on the stories that I hear from my parents and from people of their age, but from what I read in history books. But there was a big debate in America about whether or not we should get involved in this thing, or whether the Europeans could simply resolve this, or even whether if an autocratic regime like Hitler's were to take over a big chunk of Europe, would it eventually collapse? And all that. We sort of watched that happen with Russia. To what extent should we get involved? So Bush's grandfather may have been enjoining Lindbergh and many others at that time in saying, well. Let's wait before we get into this. So on the one hand, yeah, there are Bush family connections to the rise of the Hitler regime. And on the one hand, on the other hand, they're not particularly, in my opinion, anyhow, and I've read several of these histories, not particularly strong. I think the more accurate parallels, and frankly, the more frightening parallels, are between the way that Adolf Hitler exploited the burning of the Reichstagsgebäude on February, as I recall, February 23rd, 1930, was it 33, by Marius van der Lubbe, this 28-year-old Dutchman who some say was schizophrenic, who had tried to set on fire several buildings around the Parliament building by taking clothing and soaking in kerosene and tossing it on the outside of these like brick buildings and stone buildings. And, of course, it didn't do anything. And finally, he succeeded in burning down the Parliament building, and the equivalent of burning down the United States Capitol, the German equivalent of that. And of course, to this day, the main theory is that he succeeded because Hitler's goons helped him. But Hitler stood, although that still hasn't been confirmed. In fact, there was just a book published this year in Germany claiming that Hitler's goons had nothing to do with it, that Marius van der Lubbe actually did act alone, and that Hitler's guys capitalized on it. But that debate is still going on in Germany. But the point is that as soon as Hitler learned that that building was burning, he was having dinner with von Papen and Hindenburg. And he, of course, Hitler at that point didn't have power, didn't have absolute power in Germany. He hadn't a majority in Parliament, and so he ran over to the building, and got a radio reporter and on national radio, standing in front of the burning hulk of the Reichstagsgebäude, the Parliament building, said from God, and he declared a war against Wilhelm within weeks into a position of power to convince Hindenburg to appoint him as chancellor, and then. Within a month of that, he consolidated all of the police agencies in Germany into one single, essentially, Office of Homeland Security, and he began using, and you can hear Rudolf Hess actually introduce this, it's in the movie Triumph of the Will by Leni Riefenstahl, in the Nuremberg rallies in 1934, I think it was. You can hear Rudolf Hess introduce this word. Hitler was a big student of the Zionist movement back then, and he knew that the Zionists used this word homeland all the time to refer to having a Jewish homeland, and he thought that he needed to create in the minds of Germans a separate racial identity, this whole thing of the Aryan and all this kind of stuff, which was ultimately what he did. And he did this by specifically stopping to no longer referring to Germany as the fatherland or as Germany, as Deutschland, but instead referring to it as Heimat, as the homeland, and as if there was like some racial ancestral place, and exploiting that. Of course, who was using the word homeland in the United States prior to 9/11? Nobody. It just was not done. And then Hitler got past the enabling laws. This was all within a few months of the burning of the Reichstagsgebäude. He got past the enabling laws, which allowed the police to intercept mail and read it, allowed police to tap telephones, allowed people to sneak and peek into people's homes. And the only way he could get this through Parliament was to put a four-year sunset provision on it. It had to expire at the end of 4 years if the national emergency had gone away. And of course, the Patriot Act had a four-year sunset provision. And so those are the parallels, frankly, that wake me up in the middle of the night, not whether or not his grandfather somehow thought that Hitler was a good guy.
Well, so. It almost is like he took this all out of that book.
Yeah.
He's using the same words, and I guess Hitler was also a religious fanatic, I guess.
Well, he was and he wasn't. Hitler was pretty cynical about religion, but he called for what he called Neues, I don't remember how do you say Christianity in German, but a new Christianity was the phrase that he used in the English version of it. And his call for a new Christianity was a call for a revival of the church. And at the same time, he was stomping the church. I mean, the Catholics were among the first bunch that he came, or at least the Catholics who disagreed with him, as you'd say. In fact, let me just play for you. Here's Rudolf Hess. Note, Heimat is the word for homeland in German, or literally for home. Here is Rudolf Hess introducing this word into the German lexicon.
Dank Ihrer Führung.
Thanks to the Führer.
Wird Deutschland sein Ziel erreichen.
Now Germany
Heimat
is...
Heimat zu sein.
There you go. Heimat zu sein. And again.
Heimat zu sein. Für alle Deutschen der Welt. Alle Hitler!
See, he says it's the homeland now for all the Germans in the world. Heimat zu sein für alles Deutsche in der Welt. So it's... Yeah, that's Rudolf Hess there making that introduction. Anyhow, thank you very much for the call. It's good to hear from you, and I appreciate, Martha, you raising this issue and giving me a chance to rant about it. These are perilous times, I think. Rob in Pennsylvania is on the line. Rob, is that Rob Call of opednews.com?
It is.
Hey, Rob, how's Op-Ed News doing?
Oh, we're doing great. We're going to break 300,000 readers this month.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. It's a great news source.
Had an interesting lunch today with a gentleman who's planning to run against Rick Santorum.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
From which party?
The Democrat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We talked about who his probable opponents in the primary will be and what strategies he needs to work on. He's a good guy. It's exciting to have somebody this early planning to go up against such an embarrassment to my state.
Well, the senators are elected for 6-year terms, but they come at different periods in time. So every 2 years, some senators are up for re-election. Is Santorum up for election in 2 years or 4 years?
Two years.
It's
going to be 2006, the next major election phase.
Well, now's the time to begin planning for it.
His name is Chuck Panaccio, and you can check him out at chuckforsenate2006.com.
Okay, Chuck for Senate, 2006.com. And you think this guy can actually give Santorum a run for his money? I mean, Santorum has incredible power and money behind him.
Well,
just
that's
absolutely
right.
Incredible power and money behind him.
Chuck is a very experienced guy politically. He has not run for office before, but he's been behind the scenes in many political races.
Yeah, but I mean, you've got Scaife there in Pennsylvania, and I mean, this is going to be... Well, okay, yeah. Chuck for Senate, 2006.com. Rob, thanks a lot for calling and letting us know about that.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where despair is not an option. Get active!
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left.
In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. But I did both, and I'm incredibly proud. But with the world and everything going on today, I get so overwhelmed. It's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. But I don't want all of my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment referral at 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Don't think of buying from Canada. Oh, we will not play nice. We wrote the new legislation forcing the nation to pay the top price. Oh, Grandma, sign the paper.
Don't buy your drugs from Canada, no. You got to look out for, you know, all those dead Canadians. You know, they're just falling over the borders from all those dangerous drugs up there, the dangerous pharmaceuticals. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. John in Boston's on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Good. I've been listening to you for a long time. You're really great, your whole program.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say, you know, our president and his cabinet of evil, they're also hypocrites. You know, they're condemning the fraudulent elections in Kiev. But nothing is being said by the mainstream media about the tragedy that's taken place here.
Yeah, with the singular exception of Keith Olbermann. On MSNBC.
Right, right.
I mean,
you know, like the states of Ohio and Florida should have come to a complete standstill on November 3rd. I mean, if people were really, really cared, you know, about our country. And if we're caring Americans and we don't do something now, the country's not worth saving.
Well, I would never say that, John.
Well, you know, I know it's worth saving, but in the same instance, you know, we have to be Americans and get out there and do something about it.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of us who are, by the way. There are people all over Ohio right now scouring for the vote. David Cobb at votecobb.org has been able to raise, you know, the $130,000 or $113,000 filing fee. They're calling for the recount down in Florida. Bev Harris is down there with blackboxvoting.org and some other folks, verifiedvoting.org, and they're doing audits of the machines. They're finding evidence of fraud. Yeah. It's the problem is that there is not yet this very, very clear smoking gun threshold of proof that ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN claim that they want. And the smoldering pieces that Olbermann has been talking about on MSNBC and that we talk about here haven't been enough to really captivate the attention of America. Plus, there's this kind of general consensus that Bush got 3.5 million votes. I mean, Gore got a 500,000 more than Bush last
right,
time, but
right.
Bush got more votes. And so even if you made the fight and Kerry ended up taking Ohio, let's say, because there was a recount and the recount turned out that he actually did win Ohio,
well,
that
he'd
have a heck of a hard time governing.
The time is getting pretty close for certification of this election, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And it, I believe it's December 6th.
Something has to be done fast.
Well,
happens.
Yes and no. Jonathan, I think it's Jonathan Turley, the constitutional expert, has written that even after certification, it's still possible to change an election prior to the election by the college in Washington, D.C., because the electors vote in the states, in the individual states.
Okay.
And that's when the election is certified, the electors are nominated, the slate of electors. And then that is mailed, back in the old days with Pony Express, to Washington, D.C. And then, as I recall, the first Monday after the first Tuesday or Wednesday in January, it's in the Constitution, I'd have to go find it, but it's basically, you know, the first week or so of January, the president of the Senate, in this case the vice president, will open the envelopes and count the vote. And that's when the actual counting of the vote happens, and that is the point at which the president is actually elected.
I see.
So there is, on the one hand, there is still time. On the other hand, you know, if Kerry was actually elected and there was clear fraud, then absolutely, I want him to be the guy who's the president. But if that can't be demonstrated, this ship is inch millimeters from an iceberg. I mean, the Bush administration is rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic right now.
That's what I'm saying. It's the greatest country on earth, and I can't see why more isn't being done in the mainstream media. We've got to either boycott the radio and TV stations and bring attention.
Well, you raise your voices. You make it known. But what I'm predicting is that this is going to be the end of the Republican Party. That George Bush for two generations is going to be referred to the way Herbert Hoover was until recently.
Right. Thank you very much, Tom.
Yeah, thanks for calling,
bye-bye.
John. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. This I really believe this is going to be the end of the Republican Party. You've got Alan Greenspan going around the world. He was in Europe yesterday, begging for, you know, hey, please trust us. We're taking care of the dollar. You have the Wall Street Journal in their editorial yesterday, attacking Bush administration fiscal policies and the Fed in particular, going after Greenspan, who's been the champion of all this stuff. It was Greenspan who said, oh, yeah, tax cuts for the rich, no problem at all. Rich guy Greenspan, of course. And now he's going, well, maybe it is a problem. Yeah, right. We have some serious problems. 29 minutes past the hour.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Walmart has bowed to the will of the Chinese Labor Federation. The world's biggest retailer, well known for its anti-union stance, said on Monday that it would allow the federation to organize stores in that country. The All China Federation of Trade Unions issued a threat in October that it would sue Walmart and other international companies if they refused to set up union branches in their China operations. The federation is the only union organizing body in that country and is controlled by the Communist Party. Walmart operates 39 stores in China that employ 20,000 workers. Currently, the only Walmart in the world with an accredited union is located north of Quebec City in Canada.
Thousands of people marched across India this week to protest Coke's water extraction program that they say is threatening their livelihoods.
It began in Balia, which is where there's one Coke plant, and marching to another Coke plant in Mediganj, 150 miles away in northeastern India.
Brian Hirsch, field organizer with Corporate Accountability International. He says Coke is turning water from a basic human right into an unaffordable luxury.
India a lot less groundwater regulations, and so they got away with things like going into one community where they dried up hundreds of public hand-pumped wells, and now there's not enough water to meet basic needs. In another community, Mediganj, the water tables have dropped 40 feet, and actually over 40 feet, and it's been devastating to farmers. There's not enough water to irrigate crops.
The United Nations estimates that two-thirds of the world's population will not have enough water by 2025. Corporate Accountability International is demanding Coke never reopen its Pakimata plant, close its plant in Mediganj, and pay for damage done to affected communities.
A pickup truck allegedly trying to break through a picket line at a Ormec Corporation aluminum plant has struck and injured a union member. Monday was the first day of a strike organized by the United Steelworkers of America at a plant located in Hannibal, Ohio. Chuck Ballard, president of USWA Local 5760, says member Bill Rose was injured when a truck belonging to Jabo Supply Corporation charged through the line and ran over his leg. More than 1,300 employees walked off the job Monday, demanding that Ormec postpone a hearing with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court concerning a reorganization plan. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. For the first time since the early 70s, the number of foreign students enrolled in U.S. colleges and universities has declined. A survey released on November 15th lists the war on terrorism as the number one reason. Titled Open Doors 2004 and published by the Institute of International Education, the number of students who came to the United States to study last year dropped by 5%, and incomplete statistics this year suggest that number could be down another 6%. Many students, especially from Islamic countries, are finding it more difficult to obtain visas.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. A correspondent in Ontario, Canada writes in, I tried to call your show, but the number did not seem to work. The number onto which the 800 number rings, if you're outside the United States and you can't call a toll-free number, is area code 802-229-2288. 802-229-2288. Anybody outside the United States who wants to call, that's the easy way to do it. Anyhow, he says, you said Americans are politically passive because of the economic and work-related constraints. I disagree. How is it that the rural poor in India, and more notably Venezuela, where Chavez has taken even the Senate seats, take part in political activity? Or for that matter, the Chileans who just staged the anti-Bush rally. I cannot believe that there's not been a single large-scale protest or rally in the United States about the elections. It wouldn't hurt to tell your listeners that. I agree. And the more I think about this, the more I think that probably I was wrong. That it's not that Americans are not politically involved because they're working so hard, because you see that all over the world, and you know, many people in many countries like this. I have a feeling that it has more to do with the corporate ownership of our media, frankly, the consolidation of our media, and not even that, like that's some sort of evil thing in and of itself. I'm not suggesting that. Instead, it's that the process is now of media has been driven, particularly since the 80s, of news in the media, has been driven more by profit than by interest in telling the truth, telling the news. We have moved from the Walter Cronkite era of news to the modern era of infotainment. And you know, I think it's ironic because Keith Olbermann does a great job of reporting the news, and he does great infotainment. And so it's a good synthesis. I mean, you can actually see it happening, right? And faux news, of course, is the infotainment with a spin, and on it goes. So this, but I think it's a more complex thing than just any one single source. But our media have a role to play in it. The fact that for the better part of 15 years there has been only one political voice on talk radio in the United States, I think that has a large role to play in it. And that's changing. We're seeing progressive talk radio start really taking on, really, you know, Air America and other programs, my program, Ed Schultz, other programs, growing. And so I think we're at a turning point. When Kevin Phillips back in the 60s wrote The Emerging Republican Majority, I think he correctly identified a turn, a pivot point, a political pivot point. And I'm convinced we're at another political pivot point. And within the next 5, 6, 7 years, you're going to see a substantial Democratic majority emerging. If the Democratic Party can remain true to its principles or go back to its principles and abandon this new Democrat stuff that Bill Clinton, to some extent, brought in, unfortunately, in my opinion, of let's be Republican light, let's get in bed with the corporations. 24 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And let's see here. Will in Los Angeles is on the line. Hey, Will, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. You have a consistently great show there.
Thank you.
I have a theory as to how George Bush plans to pay for everything. Budget deficit, Social Security, war in Iraq.
Inflation?
No.
Okay, here's the little kicker. You know, it's 7% annual inflation in a decade, I believe. You've cut in half the amount that you have to pay back.
My theory is FCC fines.
Oh.
I mean, look at what they've been doing for the last year.
Yeah.
Record fine after record fine.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Yeah, okay. Good one. Good one, Will. What do you think that that's about, by the way? I'm just curious.
I think that is about reaching out to the quote unquote moral majority.
Yeah, I think it's about pandering.
They're just pandering.
That's right. Yeah. I agree with you. Will, thanks for the call. I appreciate
it. Thank
you. Raising a good and important and interesting issue. That we certainly haven't seen the last of, particularly now that the FCC is going to continue to be a Republican majority organization. It'll be interesting to see with Colin Powell leaving government what his son does, Michael, at the head of the FCC as well. Howard Stern is certainly giving him a run for his money these days. 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free number. Marion in Nevada on the line. Hey, Marion, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to mention something about the Pentagon. We're all talking about it's a power struggle. I think there might be something else going on here that's a little more insidious. My understanding of how the Pentagon works is that when the military gets an allocation for a year's funding, and they don't spend it all, they keep what they don't spend, and they do this thing called reappropriations, and that rolls on and on and on. And as far as I know, nobody's ever audited the military, at least on their budget. So I have a feeling if we were to do that, we'd find this giant black hole of money that they're just taking and spending on whatever they want.
Well, you recall there was that missing $1 trillion.
Yeah.
And that story vanished off the radar screens. That was, what, 4 years ago, 5 years?
Yeah.
I mean, that was during the Clinton administration
that
came out, as I recall. Might have even been before that. Might have been the tail end of the Bush administration. But, good point. Good point, Marion. And the Pentagon has managed over the years, largely since the Cold War, to maintain itself as above accountability.
Well, and that's really not what we need in a democracy.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is really interesting is if you watch this BBC documentary called The Power of Nightmares, there's a link to it on our message board, and it's a 3-hour documentary that everybody in England saw. And they go back and they point out how back in the 70s, during the Nixon administration, there was a guy who was way up, very powerful in the Nixon administration, who started beating this drum. Now, Nixon in 71, as I recall, maybe 72, had signed a disarmament pact with the Soviets. And he came back and he gave this wonderful speech in which, you know, and here I am honoring Nixon, but nonetheless, he gave this wonderful speech in which he said, "The era of fear is over." I remember Nixon saying, "The era of fear is over. We have reached peace with these people, and you can stop being afraid." And I had grown up in the duck and cover era of the 50s,
right.
You know, and we were terrified of the Soviets.
Yeah, hide under your desk.
Yeah, and so he said, you know, "The era of fear is over." And within a year, this guy was saying, "No, no, you don't get it," and he was publicly saying this, that the Soviets are not complying with the treaty. They have, for example, the submarines. We could not find any evidence that the Soviets had a way of detecting our submarines that was not acoustic. That is, that didn't use sonar, you know, ping, ping, ping.
Right.
And he said, this guy said, the fact that we can't find any evidence that they have non-acoustic sonar, that they have a non-acoustic way of knowing where we are, means that they must have developed something more sophisticated than
well,
we have.
Well, I think we would. I mean, it seems to me that thermal imaging from a satellite...
No, but just follow this for a second, Marianne. He was saying in public that the fact that there was absolutely no evidence of these advanced weapon systems that the Soviets had, that he said that they had, the fact that there was no evidence of it was proof that they were there. The CIA was blowing back at him, saying, no, sorry, you're hallucinating. And he kept saying this, and they created this committee called the Committee for the Present Danger. They ran newspaper and television ads. They were beating this drum all through the 70s and whipping people up into hysteria. And it got us convinced, by and large, that the Soviets, in fact, had all these advanced weapons. It turns out, in retrospect now, looking back, two really interesting things. Number one, this guy who had said, oh, the Soviets have all these weapons, all these secret weapons, and therefore we have to, you know, really ramp up our spending. The era of fear is not over. That guy was Donald Rumsfeld, number one. And number two, all of those weapon systems that he claimed existed, none of them existed. The Soviet Union, in fact, in the 1970s was in the middle of the process of decay. They were falling apart. They were absolutely falling apart, and the CIA had called that right. And it was Rumsfeld and the neocons and the Committee for the Present Danger and Wolfowitz and these guys who literally in the 70s were trying to create this aura of fear in the United States about a phony thing. And here we are doing it again.
Do you think Rumsfeld is behind not getting this law passed?
Yes. Yes. Yes, I do. I do. I'm very concerned about Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz, basically, are, in my opinion, at the core of this whole neocon thing. And Cheney. Cheney and Rumsfeld were the two who were doing this back during the Nixon administration. They were both senior officials in the Nixon administration. I forget which titles which held. That's my opinion. Anyhow, Marianne, I got to move along. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Billy in Santa Cruz, California, on the line. Hey, Billy, welcome back.
Hey, fella. So,
you come up with your theater?
Huh?
Have you come up with a theatrical program you can do now to wake people up?
You know what kind of trouble you got me into.
I can just imagine.
I put the ad in the paper for the babies.
Yeah.
Well, obviously I worded it badly. There are cops at my door.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I asked for 10 one-year-old babies. Now they think I'm running a baby-selling mill? I don't understand.
Yeah. Okay.
So, hey, you know, Pal's new job, I just heard what it is.
What's that?
He's the new president of Sinclair Broadcasting.
You've got to be kidding me.
I am kidding.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm not kidding. I'm predicting.
I'm expecting that he'll go to the World Bank or something like that.
Oh,
I mean,
not,
you know,
yeah,
he was,
no,
he was a director.
He's a broadcaster. Who else did?
Well, of course, he was
you know, for.
You know, he was a director of AOL Time Warner before he became Secretary of State.
Yeah, they're director. There's a job where you don't have to have any skill whatsoever.
Yeah, but you get paid well.
Board. You just have to be able to give CEOs and high management all the money they ask for.
Yeah, and you get paid very well.
And screw the... Oh, by the way, so I understand Donald Trump's casinos...
in bankruptcy, yeah.
Yeah, so that means only the stockholders got screwed.
Yeah, there you go.
Donald did just fine.
There you go. Yep, absolutely. Okay.
And I want you to read my new book. It's called The Permanent Republican Majority.
Yeah. Well, see, that's clearly what they think they have. That's why they're so opposed to making voting machines transparent.
Yeah.
It's essentially Stalinistic stuff that they're promoting, and I have a feeling they have a rude awakening coming. Let's hope so.
That's why we're going to teach democracy to the rest of the world.
Yeah. Well, so hopefully one day, again, we will. Thanks, Billy. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free number. 1-802-229-2288 if you're outside the United States. Donald in North Carolina on the line. Hey, Donald, welcome to the program.
Hey, I just had a quick call. I just had an idea for, a comic caricature, thinking they should do a giant pendulum and have a giant dipole machine permanently propped up holding it to the right.
Yeah, there you go. It's this is the problem. I mean, it really goes beyond, is it Diebold an evil company or something like that? I mean, I'm not so much of a conspiracy theorist that I think the Diebold as a corporation would be willing to engage itself in hacking the election. I frankly doubt it. I would be astounded if Diebold or ES&S or Sequoia or any of these companies were found at some sort of an institutional level to be participating in voting fraud. I can't imagine it. And yet, the problem is that they are producing machines, of course, for profit. I don't think that they're doing it because they want to see Republicans or Democrats in. I think they're doing it because they want to make money. And the Republicans pushed through this Help America Vote Act, which is the ultimate pork barrel spending bill that gave $3.8 billion to the states to then use to buy machines from these companies. And the companies have to, you know, are trying to compete with each other, and so they're keeping their software secret, and they've got these trade secrets. And what we've done is we've created, by using the free market for our vote, we've created a situation where the vote has been privatized, and it is no longer in the hands of we the people. The vote itself, the thing by which we the people administer our government. And that's the problem, frankly. And I don't think that it's a problem that has the name Diebold. It's a problem that has the name privatization.
Well, yeah, there's several companies out there. It's a really scary thing, and I agree with you wholeheartedly on that.
Yeah,
it really scares me.
Yeah, this is a big concern. Donald, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you, and I appreciate your calling into the program. It's always good to hear from our listeners. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Another Donald sends me an email here. Says, I've heard you mention that we never had an income tax until relatively early in the 20th century, and before that we relied on our tariffs. I talked about this yesterday, the day before. He says, I've also heard you refer, and many times before that, I've also heard you refer to the 19th century as the Scrooge era. I actually wrote a fairly concise article about that called Scrooge and Marley, which you can find. You go to tomhartman.com and click Articles on Democracy, and it's one of the top ones on the right-hand side. Anyhow, he says, now that I'm not that I'm one to take a Republican position, by nature I have and always will be a liberal, but one could take the position that lowering the tariffs is what allowed companies the progress they made in the 20th century, such as unions and higher wages. I really hate thinking because in my gut I know it's not true. I know how insightful you are. I was wondering if you could bring these combined subjects up on your show tomorrow. I'd really like to hear your views on this. I think you probably hit on that, but I only recently discovered you. That's why I asked. Thanks, Donald. So here's the short answer. No, the elimination of tariffs is not what brought about the boom of the middle class in the 20th century, because we didn't eliminate the tariffs largely until the 1980s, 1990s. And we actually still have tariffs on a number of things. In fact, we're just this year now eliminating tariffs on, for example, bedroom furniture, or reducing them, actually. So what happened was that the government grew beyond the point where it could be financed by tariffs. It's not so much that we got rid of tariffs as our primary source of funding, but that largely as a result of World War I, the size of the government grew to the point, and the expense of the government grew to the point where they had to institute an income tax to pay for it, to pay for our army and our participation in World War I, and then it's just been kind of an ongoing thing ever since then. And number two, the growth of the modern middle class, the contemporary American middle class, is a result. You can track it directly, a direct result of the growth of the union movement in the United States. You go back to when the Wagner Act was passed in 1935, and it first became relatively easy to join a union. Within 12 years, by 1947, 12 years later, 35% of the American workforce was unionized, which means that 70% of Americans had the equivalent of a union job. They could earn with a single income person, they could put a family through, put their kids through college, raise their family, pay for their health care, have enough money to retire, the whole thing. And that's when the blowback began. The Republicans took control of the House and Senate in 1947, in the election of 1946. And in 1947, over the veto of Harry Truman, they passed the Taft-Hartley Act that rolled back those protections in the Wagner Act and allowed right-to-work states to emerge. And that was the beginning of the slowing down. But it took about 20, 30 years for that echo down. So that's the modern middle class. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Wynn feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. On Saturday, as hundreds gathered in San Francisco's Union Square for a rally in solidarity with locked-out hotel workers, Mayor Gavin Newsom announced at his office across town that a deal had been reached to suspend the stalemate for a 60-day cooling-off period. Vinny Lombardo has more.
Unite Here Local 2 members who'd been working without a union contract since August 14th struck at four San Francisco hotels September 29th and were subsequently locked out at 10 others by the Multi-Employer Group, a consortium of San Francisco's 14 largest hotels. Rory O'Connor, a bellman at the Four Seasons, says the workers wanted a wage increase but voted for a two-week strike when the hotels tried to eliminate retiree medical, prescription, and dental coverage from about 1,000 Local 2 members.
We've accepted lower wage increases in return for good benefits. It's almost like it's part of the compensation package.
Another sticking point is the contract's length. Union members say they'd like to renegotiate in 2 years while the hotels want a 5-year deal. To Doe, Secretary Treasurer of Unite Here Local 2, says the union also wants to synchronize San Francisco hotel contracts with other cities.
We bring our fight to across North America city. We bring our fight to Hawaii, to Monterey, to Chicago, to New York, to send them the message that we're not going to be isolated in San Francisco.
The rank-and-file workers at Saturday's rally were elated at the news they'd soon be back on the job and are hopeful that the publicity generated will parlay into the contract they want. For now, the pickets are down. On Tuesday, 4,300 hotel workers will start rotating back into their shifts without conditions while the talks continue. But until a deal is inked, the situation remains tenuous, and Local 2 members say they are prepared to resume the pickets if a fair contract isn't offered. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We ain't asking you to love us. You may place yourself high above us. Mr. President, get it on working man.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Mike in Orlando on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom.
What's up?
Just quickly, I was wondering,
if George Soros were to offer to make an offer too good to refuse for Diebold and ES&S, I think they'd start paying attention to the election systems then, wouldn't they?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Mike, and you and I have discussed this in email. I hope you don't mind my outing you.
No, that's fine.
This is Mike, who does our archives at TomHartmann.com, Mike Toth. There's tremendous power or potential influence there with the money that, for example, Soros has or Warren Buffett, you know, that could be socially used. And I hope to see more of that done. Richard Mellon Scaife, Joe Coors, these conservatives have been very successful in doing this, funding the Heritage Foundation, the American Enterprise Institute, and on and on and on. And it's time for progressives to be doing the same.
They could band together and offered to basically make a free system for the government that they couldn't refuse.
Well, yeah, except that wouldn't necessarily be a good business deal. And Diebold is actually much larger than just voting machines. I mean, most of your ATMs around the country are made.
Right, they could have bought
a substantial
company.
Yeah, but it would have been a tough one. Thanks a lot for the call, Mike. It's an interesting thing to contemplate. Joel in New Cumberland, Pennsylvania, on the line. Hey, Joel, what's on your mind today?
Hey there, wanted to ask you a question about the voting machines. Okay, since you're against having them developed by a private organization, a private company.
No, not true.
No?
No,
okay.
I have no problem with them being developed by private corporations.
Okay.
I'm saying that the software that runs on them should be open source code software.
Okay.
And should be totally transparent, and the administration of the machine, if they're manufactured and our government buys them from private corporations, that's probably the best way to make it happen. But the machines have to be owned by the government, and the software has to be administered by civil servants in a completely transparent way with open source code software. That's my shtick.
Okay, all right, that kind of clears that up. I was thinking that you were kind of going towards the direction of having the government actually total hands-on.
Make the machines? No. No, I'm a believer in free enterprise. I mean, there's a lot of things that it's good to have private companies make. And I have no problem with private companies making voting machines. They'll do a better job of it than the government will, in my opinion. It should be put out for competitive bid. But for a private company to say that their software is such a secret that we can't know how they're handling our vote, that's stepping over the line. Joel, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's the end of the day. We'll be back tomorrow live on Thanksgiving. Tom Hartmann here. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira for engineering it, to our sponsors, to Jay for our music, to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Be good.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Check our website at www.tomhartmann.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivelnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can